using plastic as best you can. So if you have a picnic or something to go to, take your own fork and knife and spoon with you so you don't have to use those plastic knives and forks and spoons. And maybe even take your own cup. So things to think about. Have a very great day. And right next, right up next is the Peter B. Collins Show after the CBS.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. Former Dick Cheney aide Lewis Scooter Libby spared from prison. Libby was convicted of obstruction of justice in the investigation of the leak of a CIA operative's identity. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller joins us live. Mark, what's the latest?
Cammy, in a two-page written statement, President Bush explains his decision to commute the two-and-a-half-year prison term imposed on Scooter Libby. Mr. Bush says he respects the jury's verdict in the case, but has concluded that the prison term given to Libby was excessive. A judge today said Libby could not delay the start of his prison sentence while his conviction is appealed. And Mr. Bush declared that he is not lifting other parts of the sentence imposed on Libby, 2 years of probation and a $250,000 fine. They will remain in place. Mr. Bush also says the reputation Libby gained through his years of public service is forever damaged. Reporting live, I'm Mark Noller, CBS News.
A fast-moving investigation. That's how British authorities are describing their search for suspects who may have been responsible for car bombs in London and Saturday's attack on Glasgow Airport.
This evening, an eighth arrest, although police won't confirm where the suspect was taken into custody. Police also today given extra time to question five of the people who are being detained. They're able to question them now until Saturday.
Sky News reporter Emma Birchley, at least two, possibly more of the suspects are doctors, one from Jordan, the other from Iraq. CBS News correspondent Bob Orr reports officials here are taking a look at the suspects.
Investigators from Great Britain have forwarded the names, they forwarded some of the forensic information like cell phone numbers, that kind of thing, to U.S. investigators. And all of that's been compared against databases and watch lists. And to this point, sources say U.S. investigators have found no reason to believe there's a U.S. link to what's happened overseas.
A third American soldier in Iraq has been charged with premeditated murder and of placing a weapon on the body of an Iraqi to make it appear as if the victim was a combatant. Three killings are being investigated. Smoking just a few cigarettes a month can lead to an addiction among teenagers.
Think a single cigarette can't hurt you? If you're young, it can trigger an addiction, says a study in the Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine. Researchers followed more than 1,200 Massachusetts adolescents and found that among those who smoked, 1 in 10 were hooked within 2 days, 25% within a month. The study warns even a few cigarettes a month can trigger withdrawal symptoms.
Correspondent Barry Bagnato, pro wrestler Chris Benoit's personal physician, was charged today in connection with prescriptions he wrote for painkillers and anti-anxiety drugs.
Dr. Aston allegedly prescribed these drugs like candy.
U.S. Attorney David Namias.
Our preliminary records show over a million dosage units prescribed in the last 2 years.
A court affidavit also alleges the doctor wrote prescriptions for anabolic steroids for Benoit, who killed his wife, their son, and himself last month. This is CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on. You know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call the special toll-free number, 866-40-GO-NOW. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-40-GO-NOW for all the exciting details. That's 866-40-GO-NOW. Call now.
A new study finds many Americans not only abuse alcohol, but are dependent on it for much of their lives.
Nearly 5% of those surveyed said they'd abused alcohol during the previous year. Nearly 4% said they had alcohol dependency. In a lifetime, the combined number was just over 30%. And
only 24% of the people who had alcohol dependence ever sought treatment.
Lead author Dr. Bridget Grant is with the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. She says considering the progress made, the treatment numbers are disturbing.
These figures have not increased over the past decade.
She says part of that is due to the perceived stigma of asking for help. Peter King, CBS News.
The Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers has endorsed higher fuel standards. It represents major car makers like Ford and GM, and it says it now backs plans for new passenger vehicles to get 32 miles per gallon by the year 2022. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
Who doesn't love summer? The longer days, baseball games, and of course, road trips. That's why Econolodge and Rodeway Inn Hotels are giving you a free $50 gas card. With our Easy Choice Rewards program, just redeem 6 stamps for your free $50 gas card. It's one more reason to love summer. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com today. We'll see you there.
Earn 1 stamp per night. Maximum 5 stamps for qualifying stay. Redeem 6 stamps between 6-1 and 8-16-07 to receive gas card. For details, visit easychoiceonline.com.
Reason number 13 to switch to Geico. Everybody else is doing it. Now we know that logic never won an argument with your mom, especially when you were lobbying for that BB gun. You could put an eye out or something. But when it comes to car insurance, joining the crowd could be a good thing. Last year, more than 3 million drivers switched to Geico for savings, round-the-clock service, and the latest in online technology. Yep, millions switched, and nobody put a single eye out.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Yeah, I'll bet up at Kenny Bunkport Bush is just working on a new nickname. Scooter the Commuter. A commutered scooter. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today. We just got the news moments ago that Bush has issued a commutation. Not a pardon, but a commutation to Scooter Libby, meaning he will not have to go to jail. And the judge was about to order him to report for that black and white uniform in the next few days. Well, that's one American who's going to have a special celebration for Independence Day. We've got a lot to talk about on the program, and I'm much obliged that you've joined us. Paul Waldman will be with us in just a moment from Media Matters. We've got a lot to talk about there. Ken Silverstein, who writes for Harper's Magazine and runs their Washington Bureau, is going to be with us. He went undercover posing as Kenneth Case and interviewed with some lobbying firms in Washington on behalf of dictators from other parts of the world. And it's a fascinating story. You'll be impressed by the way American lobbyists are willing to represent almost anyone for the right amount of money. Also on today's program, journalist Dar Jamail is going to talk to us about the refugee crisis in Iraq. We'll talk about the issues in the Middle East there between Israel and its warring Palestinian faction neighbors, Hamas and Fatah. And a few other issues, too, like the large numbers of civilians being killed by American military action these days in both Afghanistan and Iraq. Reverend Billy's going to help us kick off the free speech zone. He got arrested last week in New York for reciting the First Amendment in public. Had to spend the night at the Tombs. We understand he has been released, and while his sentence was not commuted by the president, the Reverend Billy will help us kick off the free speech zone in our third hour today. And you can call then, but you don't have to wait. You can call me anytime you want to make a comment or ask a question. The number toll free is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Paul Waldman is a senior fellow at Media Matters for America. Their website, a powerful one at that, is MediaMatters.org. Paul, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Always nice to talk with you. And you were the one who tipped us off just a few minutes ago about the announcement from Kenny Bunkport. And I guess Putin is to blame here. Do you think somehow he prevailed on Bush to commute Scooter's sentence?
That may have been what happened. Who knows? But it is kind of interesting, and you can already see the conservatives arguing that, well, you know, he's really not getting away with it because he still has to pay a $250,000 fine, and I'm sure there's a fundraiser being planned for that as we speak. And, you know, he'll still have his reputation besmirched. But I think it was really extraordinary throughout this whole thing to see the people who were so serious about the rule of law when during the Clinton administration, when we were talking about his consensual affair with Monica Lewinsky, when it came to Scooter Libby, who lied to investigators, who lied to a grand jury, and they weren't so concerned about the rule of law. And when he was given a tough sentence, the people who were ordinarily tough on crime didn't think that he should have to fill that sentence, and now Bush has assented to their wishes.
Yeah. No, it was amazing to see these law and order types who decry activist judges vilifying Reggie Walton, who is a Republican appointee, for just, you know, reading the law the way it's written.
Yeah, and he was a judge who obviously said, as you know, judge. One of the things to note about this is that judges and prosecutors tend not to look too kindly on people who lie to them.
Yeah.
When Libby began to lie, that's usually an indication that there's something wrong that they're trying to cover up.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge decided that he deserved to be punished to the fullest extent of the law, but that's not how George W. Bush felt.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll talk more about this with our callers a little bit later on in the program. Let's now take a look at some of the excesses and weak performances in the media last week, and I cannot resist starting off with Chris Matthews and the two nights of exploitation of a crappy interview with Ann Coulter. And she was predictably full of bile and ready to, you know, attack almost anybody, including Bush and Republicans, because she was angry about the immigration vote when she was on Hardball. But it was fascinating because Matthews appeared shocked by what she predictably delivered on that program. And, of course, people now know that Elizabeth Edwards called in to challenge Ann Coulter for some ugly remarks she had made on another program that same day or the day before. And Coulter was just ice cold and would not acknowledge that she had said rude, crude, or improper things. And I thought Elizabeth Edwards came off as pretty classy in the way she tried to confront Ann Coulter. And then the next night, they milked it for, you know, a whole other episode of Hardball. And I had to turn it off, Paul, when they brought on Armstrong Williams to talk about Ann Coulter.
Yeah, someone who knows a lot about ethics and journalism. For those of your listeners who don't remember, Armstrong Williams was paid by the Bush administration to write columns touting No Child Left Behind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that, you know, you mentioned about Matthews. The interesting thing was, as you said, you know, they promoted this for a couple of days before Ann Coulter's original appearance happened. And on the air, Matthews was apologetic. You know, he said, as with Ann Coulter still sitting there, that he was going to have to go to confession because he had had her on his show. Despite all that, of course, you know, they hype her appearance, and then they keep inviting her back. So, you know, he can't feel too guilty about putting someone like Ann Coulter on a show, because if he did, he wouldn't invite her on, but yet he keeps doing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in that second episode, the second night, John Edwards himself appeared, and they just kept talking about Ann Coulter, and it was remarkable because Edwards talked about how he wanted to be there to talk about the issues, and Matthew said, yeah, 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 but what about Ann Coulter? And I believe that Edwards was on for almost half an hour, and that's all they talked about was this contrived, hard-hitting appearance by Ann Coulter the night before. And if this is what's going to pass for dialogue in our presidential campaign coming up, we're in the deepest of doo-doo, Paul Waldman.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it is what's going to pass for dialogue. I mean, we've already had goodness knows how many articles written about John Edwards' haircuts. You know, there's no indication yet that the press is going to perform any better this election than they did in previous elections. But I think, you know, there was something else really interesting I felt that came out of that little exchange between Coulter and Elizabeth Edwards. Edwards asked her, she said, you know, politely, I would ask you to stop these kinds of personal attacks. And Ann Coulter's response was, oh, the wife of a presidential candidate is asking me to stop speaking. I guess I should stop reading books and I should stop writing columns. To Ann Coulter, asking her to stop being personal, stop, you know, advocating people's murder, stop using all kinds of slurs against them, that, as far as she's concerned, is asking her not to speak and not to write, because that obviously is the only kind of rhetoric she understands, the only thing she feels that she could possibly engage in. If she were not to advocate violence and use slurs against people, she wouldn't have anything to say whatsoever. And that's her perspective. That's her belief. It was really quite revealing, I think.
Paul, give me a little counseling here, because one of the things that we have wrestled with, and I've been open with my listeners about this, is that in many ways I'm tempted to just ignore her and not to give her any, you know, extended life of the hateful crap that she's already spewing out. But I also have a sense that if we don't respond, and if we don't, at minimum, expose what she says for its hateful ugliness and offer some level of criticism, that it will appear that we accept this as just, you know, part of the political landscape and part of our corporate media environment.
Well, I guess my answer would be that there's no need to engage her directly. I mean, it's perfectly fine for Elizabeth Edwards to do that, and you can understand why she would have done that. But I think that for people like us, the people who we need to talk to about this are the media companies that decide that they're going to give her their airtime. And she was on the cover of Time magazine. She's on Hardball. She was on the Good Morning America not long ago. She's been on the Today Show many times. They should be asked why they give her this kind of airtime, why they give someone who engages in that kind of rhetoric that kind of time, while, by the way, not giving anybody on the left who's even 1% as radical anytime. We should ask them about that. And also, you know, the politicians who embrace her should be asked about that. Mitt Romney, who spoke before her at the Conservative Political Action Committee conference, talked about how Ann Coulter was following him, and that was really good. And there was some video of the two of them chatting and yucking it up backstage. So reporters should start asking Mitt Romney whether he agrees with the kind of things that she says when she has called for the assassination of Bill Clinton, when she said that someone should poison Justice John Paul Stevens, when she's said that that her only regret with Timothy McVeigh was that he didn't go to the New York Times building and kill the staff of the New York Times. Those people should be asked what they think about those things and whether they want to give her their megaphones and associate themselves with her.
Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating, not that these are directly connected, but within 24 hours of the follow-up Hardball episode, which replayed all of the vitriol from the night before, the Congress passed, by an overwhelming margin, the House did, a measure which is a rider on another bill which bans any effort to reimpose a fairness doctrine. And I have my own issues about the fairness doctrine, and in the next segment we'll talk about it as a reaction to the recent study about conservative talk radio. But it was stunning to me how quickly that legislation surfaced and was passed with very little deliberation. In this climate, when Ann Coulter was permitted to spew all this stuff, and the only balance was that they permitted Elizabeth Edwards to call in. But there's nobody who was on equal footing with Ann Coulter to challenge the very things that she was saying.
Yeah, and, you know, as you say, the fairness doctrine is a complicated issue, but one of the things we do know is that right now the conservatives are using this as a way to try to paint themselves as being potentially oppressed. You have Senator Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma, who's an arch conservative, going around telling people that he was in the elevator a while back and he heard a secret conversation between Hillary Clinton and Barb Boxer that they were planning on bringing back the fairness doctrine, and you have Rush Limbaugh out there saying, they're trying to silence me, I don't know too many liberals who are actually all that interested in the fairness doctrine. There are a couple of members of Congress who are talking about it, but it's certainly not any kind of movement. It's the conservatives who want to use this as a rallying cry to say that, you know, that the liberals are coming to shut them down and to silence them.
We'll talk more about that right after a break. Paul Waldman with me from Media Matters for America. And if you want to call in, there are lines open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Two great Chinese restaurants, two great locations, one great American name.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, and expensive Chinese food prepared to order every day. Personally, I love the chow fun noodles. Jim's Restaurant is now celebrating its 8th anniversary at 1584 Del Monte. Join the party. Buy lunch or dinner for four at Jim's in Seaside and get a free order of tempura vegetables. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117 for a great takeout.
Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale is a local treasure. Jim's owner and chef, Stephen Lowe, has over 20 years of experience in renowned San Francisco restaurants. Chef Lowe provides his loyal clientele with the best of East meets West, including the finest steaks in Monterey County. Chef Lowe enhances classic American and Chinese dishes with delicious French and Italian entrees and sauces. Jim's Restaurant in Prunedale transcends categories with a unique pace-setting menu and family-friendly prices. Jim's in Prunedale is open daily for lunch and dinner. Stop by 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road or call Chef Stephen Lowe at 663-4888 for carryout to die for.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Have you ever felt trapped by fears, anxieties, and limitations in your life? Are there recurring problems you just can't seem to solve? There are solutions to the traps and puzzles of life, and Glenn Brooks, host of Vibrant Living, can show you how to find them. Join Glenn and Simone Zone creator John Mejia for a special Vibrant Living series on energy, psychology, and what it could do for you. This simple, respectful, drug-free, holistic approach based on current understanding of imagery, acupuncture, and focus can open up new insights and abilities. Saturday at 11 a.m. to noon right here on KRXA 540.
How would you like to stop your taxes from paying for war? You can support the War Tax Option Act, which adds a checkbox to your tax form that stops your taxes from funding war. This frees up your tax money to pay for other vital programs that you care about. For more information, call 831-521-6042 or visit wartaxoption.org.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 23 minutes after the hour. I'm glad you're listening. We're talking about Media Matters with Paul Waldman from MediaMatters.org and Cynthia's on the line from Monterey. Hi, Cynthia. You're on the air.
Hi. This is the most irresistible subject of conversation we could have. It's about Annie, little Annie. And it's amazing that she would bring up McVie as if somehow there was a failed plan.
Oh, well, she has really, you know, gone to the dumpsters of history, the dustbins of history, to come up with some of the ugliest comments you can imagine. And just last week, she repeated a Bill Maher joke
out of context. And then when that was converted into a soundbite, she complained that it had been, you know, taken out of context. And Paul Waldman, do you think we ought to rule in her favor on that one?
Well, you know, what she said was Bill Maher had actually talked about there was a terrorist attack that nearby where Dick Cheney was at the time in Afghanistan, and he basically said that, you know, if Dick Cheney were actually killed, then other people would live, and it might end up being a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
She mentioned that on a show and then said, well, I guess the next time I talk about John Edwards, I'll just advocate that he be killed in a terrorist attack.
Yeah.
And you can say that, well, you know, maybe that's defensible. But it's not as though that's the first time she's talked about killing somebody. She does it all the time. I can't think of anybody on the left who comes even close to anything like that.
Well, I can.
Okay, who?
Remember Ted Bundy, who was hiding in plain sight, and also Gacy, the clown, who was also hiding in plain sight and rubbing elbows with Washington elite.
Hmm. You mean Jeff? Do you mean Jeff Gannon?
No, you know Gacy. He was a murderer.
Serial killers.
Yeah.
Serial killers, and
okay.
That's.
But how do we connect that to politics, Cindy? I don't.
Well, Gacy had his picture taken with Rosalynn Carter, I think it was.
Oh, okay.
And Ted Bundy was like an aide or a page or something in Washington. I'm just saying.
I don't remember that part.
It's typical of people like that who like to hide in plain sight.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
She's
okay.
Well, I don't know if Ann Coulter has ever actually killed anyone, but what I do know is that she's invited on television time and again to spew that kind of stuff, and there's no one on the left who comes even close to that in terms of their rhetoric that gets on TV.
Because
right, and Chris Matthews forgot to ask her about her voter fraud investigation in Palm Beach. Just didn't get around to that. Paul, I want to turn to what really surprised me, because on Friday, just before they broke for the holiday, the 4th of July holiday break, the House of Representatives zipped through a bill with a lopsided positive vote, which would ban any attempt to re-implement the Fairness Doctrine. And as you and I have discussed, it's a complicated issue. It was phased out during the Reagan administration. It was something that was under the control of the Federal Communications Commission at the time. And now Congress is banning them from even considering reimposing this. And as you mentioned in the prior segment, this is a way of heightening the sense of victimization that the right has, because they only control 91% of talk radio. And they say, well, gosh, if you don't like it, just use your finger. And presumably they mean to push the button and tune to something else, but there isn't anything else. And they don't seem to acknowledge the monopoly that they hold, even as they lock it in even further.
Yeah, and one of the conservative arguments is that that dominance you speak of, that 91% of talk radio that's conservative, they say that that's just because of the market. That's just the market working, and that people just want to hear all those conservative talk radio hosts. But it's much more complicated than that. In fact, in a lot of places, there are a couple of companies that own all the radio stations in town, and in some cases like Clear Channel, which is the biggest one, and other companies like Salem Communications, which is extremely conservative and owns a lot of radio stations, the place where you live may not have any radio stations that are willing to put progressives on the air. This is something that some progressive radio hosts have talked about. Ed Schultz, who is probably the most widely syndicated progressive talk radio host, he has said that, you know, everywhere he goes, he beats the pants off of the likes of Sean Hannity, but he can't get into markets where he's not in, because none of the station owners will put on the progressive radio host.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the market working its magic. People don't have an infinite array of options from which to choose. In a lot of cases, in a lot of places, there simply is no progressive radio.
Yeah. And we don't have time to play this clip, but I just want to direct people to Media Matters and listen to this trek for yourself. But Glenn Beck has found a new low. And kind of like Chris Matthews, he posed as being an involuntary participant in this. But on his radio show, he read an ad that is really gross, and it's called Mexanol or something like that. And it's a phony commercial for a fuel that is made from dead Mexicans. And it is, supposed to be some sort of a sick joke about the immigration debate. But it's just another reason why this guy is unqualified for the television assignments he has, and probably for the radio show that he has.
Yeah, absolutely. People can hear that at MediaMatters.org, and it makes you wonder why this week Glenn Beck is substituting for Paula Zahn on CNN for on her 8 p.m. show Paul is on now.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul. We'll talk again soon.
I look forward to it.
Paul Waldman, Media Matters.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show, only on KRXA 540. Down in Monterey.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Ropp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Let's go undercover with Kenneth Case.
The story is true.
You got a lot of
lot of repressed feelings, Turkmenbashi, don't you?
Don't you, Friday?
Joining me now on the Peter B. Collins Show, journalist Ken Silverstein. He writes for Harper's Magazine. He's based in Washington. And he recently published a hell of a story that I really enjoyed reading over the weekend. Ken, welcome back.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
I'm very well.
I understand that you have a fabulous, fancy new set of threads.
I do. It's the first time in my life I've ever owned a presentable suit.
Really?
Well, I have, I have a number of sort of second or even third-tier suits, but nothing fancy until now.
So did you get, like, a Brioni suit, or did you go to London's Savile Row and have them custom fit you?
Well, you know what? I didn't go that far, and in fact, I'm embarrassed. I'm not even going to tell you where I bought the suit because it wasn't all that fancy, but by my standards, it was really, really gold.
All right. Did the commercial for the place where you bought it end with, "I guarantee it"?
I don't think so. I'm not sure, but it was certainly not a suit that a real live super financier would probably have worn, but I thought it was close enough that nobody would be paying attention and I would be able to get away with it. I mean, the whole story, I think, worked for one reason, which is that the lobbyist viewed me as a big glowing sack of cash. So they weren't looking all that closely. I could, it wasn't really an expensive suit, but it was close enough that I don't think anybody noticed.
All right, and did publisher Rick MacArthur approve the expense report for that suit?
Well, hey, let's not go there. I believe that most of my clothing bill was covered by the magazine.
Okay. And before we reveal exactly what your quest was, any other accessories? Did you have a diamond pinky ring? Did you upgrade with a Rolex? How did you make yourself look disgustingly wealthy because of your linkage to a brutal regime?
Well, I did get a fake Cartier that a friend of one of the Harper's editors had flew to us from Hong Kong, I got, again, by my standards, an expensive pair of glasses. I don't actually wear glasses, but...
I see. And some Gucci loafers?
No, I didn't have Gucci loafers, but I did get a new pair of Italian shoes.
Okay.
Again, I don't want to go too much further here, because Rick MacArthur might get upset if he knows the full bill that we paid for the accessory.
Well, that's okay. I have a good relationship with him because I somehow helped him get the Saturn account to advertise in Harper's, and he's been grateful ever since.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that.
So if you ever need a little help, just drop my name and see how far it goes.
Okay.
So your quest was to see if K Street lobbying firms in Washington, D.C., would agree to represent some of the most brutal regimes in the world as you came in as a representative or principal of a murky and phony organization called the Maldon Group.
Right. I mean, we had one regime in mind. You know, we were trying to figure out just how low could you sink. And, I don't think you could sink lower than North Korea, but that would have been illegal and not really, I mean, you couldn't have sold that, will you represent the government of North Korea? That just seemed completely over the top. So we figured the next in line would be Turkmenistan, which is, I'm sure your listeners know, a neo-Stalinist government. I mean, it was ruled until late December by the great Turkmenbashi. That was his own that was the name he gave to himself.
Right.
The great leader of the Turkmen people. He renamed months of the year after himself and after other relatives. His mother, I can't remember what month she got. He was January. And, he built these huge statues, gold-covered statues of himself. He dies in December, and he's succeeded by his illustrious minister of health and personal dentist.
And I want you to pronounce his name. This is a real test of whether you could actually represent Turkmenistan.
I'm not even going to try. I claimed during my interviews that I'd never actually been to Turkmenistan. I was familiar somewhat with the natural gas trade because my company was supposed to have a stake in the Turkmen natural gas sector. But I made sure that I would never have to try to convincingly pronounce his name.
All right, I'm going to give it a stamp here. The dentist was Berdimuk.
You see why I didn't try?
Kurbanguly Berdimukhamedov. Wow, that is quite a mouthful.
Yeah, exactly. And I did talk to a Russian friend who... And I practiced for 10 minutes, and then I just gave up in exasperation and said, I'll just have to be able to explain why I can't pronounce it.
And when you wrote the article, did you type in his name once and then just cut and paste it the rest of the time?
I did, so I wouldn't make mistakes.
It's nice to know that some people use the same little shortcuts that I do.
Yeah.
Ken Silverstein is with us, Washington editor of Harper's Magazine. He posed as Kenneth Case from the Malden Group. And you would present yourself, I guess you first contacted them by email and said that in a few weeks I'll be in Washington and we're looking for representation for Turkmenistan. Will you see me? Was that the general?
Yeah, basically I said that we were looking for a Washington firm that could put together a strategic communications plan that could convey to the American people the exciting changes taking place in Turkmenistan under the new Stalinist dentist, and that I would be coming to town, and that I wanted to set up meetings with firms that would be interested in representing Turkmenistan, mm-hmm. and the Malden Group, my phony London firm. And so I contacted four firms, and two of them asked me a few questions. I mean, they did at least a minimal amount of due diligence. There was nothing too grueling, but I thought, you know, I never intended to go in for meetings with four firms. That was just too much. I was going to go in with two, so the two that asked me questions like, what's the name of the man you work for, which I wouldn't reveal to Cassidy and Associates or APCO, I dropped two of the firms because they were asking these pesky questions, and then I went in with the two that just basically were so craven that they were willing to do anything I asked. You know, by the way, not only do I want you to represent this vile dictatorship on behalf of my firm, which sounds extremely shady and dubious, but I won't tell you anything at all about us. And both these firms said, no worries, we'll sign a confidentiality agreement. So I thought, that's just the sort of people I want to be meeting with. So I went in and met with those two companies, again, Cassidy and Associates and APCO.
And is their mantra, ask me no questions and I'll tell you no lies?
Well, that sort of seemed to be their unofficial motto. I mean, they, during the meetings, both of them made little tepid probes to try to get a bit more information, but I just said, you know, basically, discretion is the very hallmark of our operation. Can't tell you anything about us. We are a firm that is extremely discreet, and we're in a sensitive business in Turkmenistan, and so I'm just not really prepared to share much information. I did assure them, though, that if we moved to the stage of actually negotiating the final contract, that I would be able to provide them with evidence that we could pay the firms, that we could meet any obligations, financial obligations. And I think that was, you know, that put their mind at ease.
And so you didn't have to wire any cash in advance. You didn't have to provide a letter of credit or a letter of referral. It appears that they did very little to find out who you were and that they took your representations at face value.
Oh, they did. They didn't, and they did, you know, they couldn't find out anything about the Malden Group because the Malden Group doesn't exist. I mean, we did create a web page, which actually was a mistake. I mean, I don't think we should have done that. We just put together, it was literally one page. It had the name of the firm and an address on Cavendish Square in London, which we, you know, identified as a big office building.
Right. Is it still up?
It's there. Yeah, you can go to themaldengroup.com and check out the one-page website. But that was it. And, I'm still sort of baffled that these firms went for it. I mean, we gave them such little information. The whole deal seemed so shady and on behalf of such a horrible regime that I really didn't know if they'd take the bait, but two of them did.
So this is the web page? I mean, it just, it in very basic type, it just reads the Malden Group. And then there's a kind of half tone, and then in the next window it has an address at Cavendish Square and the web address that we just accessed.
Yes, that's it. That's all there is. That was our web page.
Holy cow.
Yeah, no, due diligence does not seem to have been high on their list of priorities.
Wow. We're talking with Ken Silverstein, Washington editor of Harper's. He posed as Kenneth Case. Now tell us about your visit first to APCO, and you took a buddy named Ricardo along with you, right?
Well, I consulted with people about how to set up the meetings and how I should behave. And one of the things that people said was, you're not going to fly in from London, a big fancy firm like yours that, you know, clearly is super rich and, you know, in a business situation in Turkmenistan. You're not going to come in by yourself, so you have to have a colleague. And up until the last minute, I couldn't actually get anybody who would come along with me.
Mm-hmm.
When finally, by chance, I actually went to meet with a Russian friend, And she just said, you know what, I just don't think I can do it. I just don't feel comfortable enough, and I'm afraid that I'll blow it. And her boyfriend was sitting there, and he said, I'll do it. I'd be perfectly comfortable to do it. And he's Spanish-born. And so we said, I said, fine, okay, we'll make you into another Malden Group consultant, and you'll be a Spaniard, and you'll be working on this account with me, basically. You'll represent the Malden Group as a consultant. And he came along, and, that was my partner on the deal.
Now, did you have to buy him a suit and business cards? I mean, that could double your costs.
No, he actually was, he's somebody who had some business background, unlike me. I'm just a bum. I'm a journalist. You know, I've never really required a fancy suit. But he used to actually travel around, and, he was an economist. And he it was nice because he had some background in the energy business. He'd been involved in some energy deals. And so he had something hanging in his closet, so we didn't have to shell out for him, too.
All right. So you and Ricardo show up at APCO, and this is in a downtown Washington office, and a guy named Barry Schumacher greets you. Why don't you give us a quick tour of this meeting?
Well, he's the executive vice president of the firm. He had been my primary contact. He takes me upstairs, and we meet with three other people. There was Jennifer Miller-Weiss-Dick, who was a former spokeswoman for the CIA and for Vice President Cheney, now a lobbyist, of course. And there were two other people there. Another one worth mentioning is Elizabeth Jones, the former ambassador to Kazakhstan and former senior State Department official who had extensive dealings in the Caspian region. And we go in, and, they have a PowerPoint presentation that they show me. And they talk about what they can do to help out the government of Turkmenistan. You know, they're going to have a media campaign that will include planting op-eds in the newspapers. Not only will they plant them, though, they'll also write them. And then they'll go out and find signatories. You know, they have friendly academics and friendly think tank people. And they'll, go and, having written the op-ed, say, gee, would you mind putting your name on this? And then after doing that, then they'll plant it in the newspaper. They told me that they actually have somebody on staff at APCO. His or her, they didn't give me the gender, but his or her nine to five job is planting op-eds. That's what they do for a living.
Hmm.
And so they said they could do that for me.
Uh-huh.
They said that they could also set up these bogus, seemingly independent events in Washington where, they wouldn't call it Turkmenistan Day because that would be too obvious, but they'd call it something like Caspian Basin Energy Day or, Caspian Basin Pipeline Day. And then we'd have this event, and we'd invite speakers, and, the whole thing would basically be controlled. The agenda and the speakers would be controlled by the lobbyists. It wouldn't appear to be a lobbying event because they said we'd get the imprimatur of a respected third party to set the whole thing up so that it would be maybe a think tank, or they suggested a roll call, the Capitol Hill newspaper, which sponsors events for outside groups. So they said it would look independent, but we'd have full control of the agenda.
And what about a little golf in Scotland? That really worked well for Abramoff.
Well, tragically, they didn't invite me on a golfing tour, but they did say that they could set up congressional junkets. That they said in the post-Abramoff climate, one would have to be a little bit careful, and it might not be wise to immediately send over a delegation of congressmen and women, but that they could certainly send over, Cassidy told me they could certainly send over a group of congressional staffers, and from there they'd work on sending over a full, a delegation with full members of Congress.
APCO
also said that they could do this, and they said that, in the post-Abramoff climate we have to be careful, but we could probably recruit a Turkmen university to serve. They didn't use the word as a front for the trip, but that's clearly what they intended. They said there's this provision in the law where you can, if you get an academic sponsor, members of Congress are allowed to go. Because this is like a loophole in the new law or the new rules that Congress passed earlier this year.
Yeah, the one that doesn't allow Trent Lott to eat anywhere but McDonald's.
Exactly.
We got to
really crack down on this, relationship between lobbyists and members of Congress.
Right. But, we got to take a break.
They've already, they're identifying the loopholes that they can exploit. And they said, we can get a Turkmen university to front for this trip, and we'll be able to send over a group of members of Congress as well.
Ken, we got to take a break. We'll return and talk more about your adventures with lobbyists in Washington. Our guest is Ken Silverstein, Washington editor of Harper's Magazine, and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Do
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Sober Stones, do you have yours yet? Big Sur Jade is now available for you. This rare, beautiful, deep green jade is found in a tiny cove south of Big Sur, used by Native Americans in healing for hundreds of years. Keep one in your pocket to remind you of your commitment to living life present and sober. Go to SoberStones.com, SoberStones.com for your beautiful pocket jade. Touch it, feel it every day. Look at it. Sober Stones.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. We're talking with Ken Silverstein, the Washington editor for Harper's Magazine. He didn't use like a 60 Minutes hidden camera, but he kind of adopted a different identity, went undercover, and approached these lobbying firms in Washington on behalf of a brutal dictatorship in Turkmenistan. And, Ken, I just need to ask you this, and I do know that Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan are actually different states. They end in the same four letters. But did you have any Borat dreams as you were concocting and exercising this?
Sure. I mean, you know, we initially toyed with the idea of doing a Borat-style approach, although never really seriously, because the point here was we really wanted to show that the law regulating foreign lobbyists is extraordinarily flimsy and is not sufficient to the task, and that the law needs to be revised, and that foreign lobbyists are easily able to evade, if not the law itself, certainly the spirit of the law, and they're able to manipulate public and political opinion. So that was the real goal of this story. It was not just to show that lobbyists have no ethics or that certain lobbyists have no ethics, because in some ways that's not a big surprise. We wanted to, you know, tell a bigger story than that. And doing it Borat style, we couldn't have accomplished that because, it would have been maybe funnier, but we wouldn't have been able to take this to its logical conclusion, and
right.
Hence we would have lost the impact, the political impact.
I think one of the other interesting aspects of your story, Ken, is that these lobbying firms who display no apparent ethics have connections to people of considerable stature. And so you point out that APCO bragged that they could deliver Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid via former Republican Senator Don Riegel, and that they could get to Tom Lantos, the new Democratic chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, through a former congressman named Don Bonker. I missed him, but that's quite a name. And this is how the game is played in Washington. I mean, you got Patton, Boggs, and Blow, and they've basically got the blue side and the red side, and you come in, and it's like, well, let's take two from here and one from here, and boom, we've got influence. Let's peddle.
Well, there's no question that both of the firms really highlighted that, you know, their stable of former government officials who they had on staff, and suggested that these people would be able to open doors in Washington, and that my, you know, that Turkmenistan would benefit as a result of their political context they had. I have to point out that APCO, at least, did say, you know, anybody who tells you they can get a congressman to do what they want is lying, but we can get you in the door and make the case. So they didn't say that, you know, they sort of were pulling the strings of members of Congress, but they did say that they had very, very good ties on Capitol Hill and in the administration, and that they would be able to get, you know, Turkmen officials meetings with American government officials, and basically that we would be able to get in the door and make our case on behalf of Turkmenistan. That, they said, would be extremely easy for them to arrange.
And give us a quick one-minute sketch of your meeting there at Cassidy and Associates and how that was different from APCO.
Well, Cassidy was a much more highbrow firm. There was no question about it. I mean, it's the richest, one of the richest lobbying firms in Washington. Over the last 5 years, they have made more in lobbying fees than any other firm in town. And so it was a much more elegant setting. But it was, you know, in some ways similar. I thought Cassidy was more high-powered. I mean, if I really were a dictator looking for an effective lobbyist in Washington, I think I probably would have picked Cassidy, although they were asking $1.2 to $1.5 million a year, which was twice as much as APCO. So if I was a dictator on a budget, I might have thought about APCO.
Well, Ken, you better be careful with these recommendations, because you know, we're monitored by the NSA, and they're going to pick that up, and these firms will be using it in their marketing brochures.
Well, that's, you know what, I always worry about this sort of thing, because in a sick sort of way, because Washington is a city without any sort of moral compass, I do worry that I probably might be generating business for these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm only being slightly facetious about that. One does worry that you could actually generate, you know, the equivalent of good press for them.
Now, Ken Silverstein, I read the article. I found it fascinating and amusing on certain levels and troubling on others. And only afterwards somebody raised the question about whether it was ethical for you to go undercover and essentially lie to these folks, create pretexts under which you extracted their marketing pitches. Do you have any problem with it? It really didn't strike me as particularly unfair as I read the piece.
Well, first I would say that I was fully transparent with the readers of the magazine. It's not as if I hid what I did from the readers. We laid out in the story exactly what we did and how we did it, and if people are uncomfortable with it, then of course they're free to dismiss my findings. In addition to that, I would say that it's, you know, obviously it's a personal call here, but based on the response I've had to the story, most Americans just don't really find this to be a big moral quandary. Is Silverstein worse than the lobbyist? Is it worse to trick the lobbyist, or is it worse for the lobbyist to try to dupe political and public opinion with their shady tactics? Most people just don't seem to find that a difficult question to answer. They know immediately that the lobbyists are the bad guys. And I have had some criticism, but very little. Curiously, the most criticism has come from the Washington Press Corps, which I find very ironic, and which I wrote an opinion piece in the Los Angeles Times on Saturday addressing that criticism, and said that I find it a little bit hard to stomach a group of people who were perfectly comfortable going to the White House Correspondents' Dinner and, you know, cheering as Karl Rove rapped, to be lectured by those people about ethics. I find a little bit much to take. but I felt perfectly comfortable with what I did. I mean, obviously I would. I mean, we discussed it at the magazine. We felt it was a legitimate use of the undercover tactic, that there was a public interest at heart, that we were, you know, doing a story that would benefit the public interest, and that we wanted to bring light on a very serious problem. So, you know, if your listeners, I would urge them to read the story, of course. I would urge them to go to our website, harpers.org, and I have a blog there called Washington Babylon, and they can find my response to critics of the piece and my response to AFCO and Cassidy, which have criticized me as well.
Real good. Well, Michael Moore will turn this into a film, I'm sure.
I hope so.
Ken, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it, and you taught us something here about how things work in Washington. We'll talk again.
Thanks so much.
Ken Silverstein from Harper's. I'm Peter B. Collins. Terry McCarter of Clarion Mortgage is a lifelong resident of Monterey County and a truly dedicated, caring real estate and mortgage professional. With many years of experience, Terry always goes the extra mile for her clients. During your initial consultation, Terry gets to know your preferences and needs and then helps you choose the loan program that most precisely meets them. Terry takes the time to explain all details of the various options open to you, including any potential risks, and guides you through the mortgage process. If you're too swamped at your desk to stop by during the work hours, make a weekend appointment with Terry or see her after hours. Terry McCarter is your real estate and mortgage professional. Her offices are conveniently located in Salinas at 1271 North Davis Road, just across from Applebee's. Call Terry at 578-0773, 831-578-0773.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
A bombshell in Washington.
Presidential clemency for Scooter Libby. His 2.5-year prison term has been commuted.
The British terrorism probe narrows its focus.
Doctors from the Middle East working in Britain have become the prime suspect
in the two attempted car bombings. This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Hours after a panel of federal judges rejected Scooter Libby's bid to delay his prison sentence while he appeals, President Bush spared the former White House aide. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
In a politically jolting decision, President Bush has intervened to keep Scooter Libby from going to prison. He granted not a pardon, but has commuted the 2.5-year prison term to which Libby was sentenced. In a 2-page written statement, Mr. Bush says he agrees with the jury's guilty verdict in the case, but believes the 30-month term of incarceration imposed on Libby was excessive. But Mr. Bush points out that he is leaving in place a $250,000 fine and 2 years of probation, to which Libby was also sentenced. Mark Noller, CBS News, Kennebunkport, Maine.
My reaction is that it's an outrage.
Former Ambassador Joe Wilson, whose wife Valerie was outed as a CIA officer by a Bush administration leak. It was the investigation of that leak that led to Libby's conviction for perjury and obstruction of justice. Wilson says the commutation of Libby's prison sentence is an insult to our system of justice.
It is a demonstration to the extent to which this administration is utterly corrupted.
Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer of New York says the president's action tramples on the principle of equal justice under the law. Now this.
Hi, what can I get you, sir?
I'll have a tall cappuccino with a touch of cinnamon and some peace of mind, please.
You got it.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles, because we notice everything. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection. You even get a vehicle history report, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. Now that's peace of mind.
Oh, and I'll have some confidence, too.
See your dealer for limited warranty coverage details or visit FordCPO.com.
Hi, I'm Smokey, and this is my new friend Ernie.
Hi.
Ernie wants to be a biker.
Sure do.
Okay, just calm down, Ernie. First you need a bike, then you need Geico Motorcycle Insurance. They cover most kinds of bikes and have money-saving discounts. And finally, you'll need a nickname. Something that suits you, like, I don't know, Fuzzy Bunny.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Too late. It's already stuck, Fuzzy.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
New developments today in the investigation of the attempted terrorist car bombings in Britain. Among 8 suspects arrested, at least 3 are physicians from the Middle East. CBS News correspondent Mark Phillips reports from London.
In the car loaded with gas canisters that tried to crash into Glasgow's airport over the weekend was Bilal Abdullah, a doctor working locally but trained in Iraq. Arrested in the car stopped by police on a highway in northern England was Mohammed Asha, a doctor trained in Jordan, also working here. He and a third doctor arrested in Liverpool are suspected of involvement in the Glasgow attack and in the two failed car bombing attempts in London.
Hospitals have become the focus of police activity. U.S. security officials say there are no known links between the British plots and anyone in this country, and they say there's no intelligence suggesting an imminent attack on the United States. The White House statement on Scooter Libby was released as President Bush returned from Kennebunkport, Maine, where he had 2 days of talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
We had a very long strategic dialogue that I found to be important, necessary, and productive.
They talked mostly about the U.S. plan to install missile defense systems in Eastern Europe. Putin made a new proposal, which Mr. Bush called innovative. The two leaders went fishing with former President Bush, and Putin was the only one to get a bite. He reeled in a 30-inch striped bass. They let the fish go. No wonder it's so hard for adults to quit smoking. It's so easy for kids to get hooked. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has the latest findings.
Dr. Joseph DeFranza became curious after a 16-year-old girl complained.
She had just started to smoke a few months earlier and had trouble quitting.
So he started a study of Massachusetts grade schoolers, and now in the archives of pediatrics and adolescent medicine, he reports 10% of young smokers are hooked within 2 days, 25% within a month. In adolescents, a single cigarette can trigger withdrawal symptoms, sometimes weeks afterward. Startling, DeFranza says.
People think they're not addicted because they say, oh, I just have a craving every few weeks, and I smoke a cigarette and I'm fine. They don't realize the addiction has already started.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right, act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge, stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on, you know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 866-40-GO-NOW. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-40-GO-NOW for all the exciting details. That's 866-40-GO-NOW. Call now.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming up next hour, we kick off the free speech zone with some comments from Reverend Billy, who was arrested and detained in New York last week for reciting the First Amendment in public. Yeah, free speech under assault. But I am delighted that Dar Jamail has joined us for this entire hour, and the bonus is he's live right across the table from me here in our secret studio. Welcome, Dar.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be here.
Nice to see you again. And you're kind of resting and recovering this summer. I recall last year we talked to you as you were in Lebanon during the 34-day war between Hezbollah and Israel.
Right. As you mentioned earlier, rather than hanging out with Hezbollah for the summer, I figured I would. I did just get back from southern Lebanon about 7 weeks ago, but I'm going to take the rest of the summer and lay pretty low here until the book comes out in October.
And the book is?
I have finished the book recently. It's called Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Occupied Iraq, and it's going to come out 15 October.
15 October. Our publisher is?
Is Haymarket Books.
Haymarket. Great. Got a national book tour and first-class tickets?
Well, the first part of that's correct. We are setting up a national book tour. We're going to launch it in New York City from Democracy Now! Probably, and then just start touring. So far, we have at least a couple of months of dates set up, and hopefully to get a little bit international as well.
Yeah. Now, I hear you occasionally on Democracy Now! What other outlets, because I really respect your work, and I think it's important for people to know where to find you, and I know that NBC doesn't call that often.
They sure don't. Well, you know, Peter, aside from places like Democracy Now! And your show and other community and regional shows, that's about it. I mean, I just really don't get asked to be on national programs. I think my sole national appearance so far in the United States is about 4.5 minutes on national public radio, mm-hmm. and that's been about it. So really, I rely on community level radio, TV, and print mm-hmm. more than ever. I think that's our front lines right now.
Well, now that I know that, I occasionally get called to fill in for Tom Hartman on Air America nationally, and I'll make a note to invite you on next time.
Well, thank you.
Because I think more people deserve to hear what you have to say. Dar, let's start off with the situation in Iraq. We saw domestically last week more support for the president peeling off. Key Republicans like Voinovich of Ohio, Lugar of Indiana are joining a growing chorus of Republicans. And the Democrats are promising to keep the heat on with other votes to try to rein in the president's role and try to shift the policy toward withdrawal from the occupation in Iraq. But there are many of us on the left who are very frustrated with the slow progress and with what we see as half measures attempted by the Democrats and only to be swatted away by a more or less unified Republican Party. Do you believe that the Lugar and Voinovich defections are significant, and do you see us on a path to political change regarding Iraq here in this country?
I do see those defections as significant, and I personally don't put any money behind or hope behind backing any of the mainstream Democratic candidates or the people already in the Senate claiming that they're against the occupation and kind of hemming and hawing and rubbing their hands together about what to do. I really don't expect change to come from that avenue. However, I think it's coming directly from the situation in Iraq, where it's melting down so fast now politically, militarily, regionally over there, that I think we should expect to see more of these defections to come. I personally think that the two that you mentioned are a direct result of the political meltdown happening in Baghdad right now, where, you know, we have a recent U.S. military raid in Sadr City that has translated directly to Sadr having more of his representatives pull out of this government, right on the heels of a couple of Sunni groups now pulling out of that government as well, saying that we're pulling out of this government to join the resistance. And now we have a situation where we have the Sadrists and then even the mainstream Sunnis now pulling out of government, and that's the first step, I think, towards them joining together in a more national, unified resistance. And this is something that we saw in March and April and May of 2004, and it was the closest we ever had so far in the occupation to a unified front, both Sunni and Shia, against the resistance, and now that's starting to kind of come together again, and I think this is sending some shockwaves across Washington.
Mm-hmm. And Maliki has actually survived in power longer than I expected and that many people have predicted. What is his grip, and to what extent do you believe that he can't hold on much longer?
Well, I think you and I see eye to eye on him, and I too am surprised that he's still there, that he hasn't either been taken out by violent means or political. I think, without a doubt, his days are numbered. It's not a matter of if he will be removed from power, but when. And the question is when. And I think that the bottom line, just like the other people in this so-called Iraqi government that exists in Baghdad today, only do so because they're fully backed by the U.S. administration and propped up by the Bush administration. And Maliki is the case in point. I mean, he wouldn't even be prime minister if the U.S. administration hadn't pushed aside Jafari, who was the prime minister before him, and inserted him into power. Let's keep in mind, he was never elected. He was inserted. He was selected by the Bush administration and inserted into power when Don Rumsfeld made a trip over there, and then he was followed immediately by Condoleezza Rice making a trip over there with her cohort at Jack Straw at the time in the UK in the Blair administration to make sure Maliki came into power. And he's only surviving there because he has the full unbridled backing of the Bush administration and because he has very strong ties to the party formerly referred to as Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq, Abdulaziz al-Hakim. Hakim, the former leader of that, who is now sick, who his son now is taking control of that party, who recently was invited to visit the White House. So it's very clear who George Bush is backing, and it is this regime, or what's left of it, I should say, in Baghdad, whose power is slipping through their fingers more and more every single day.
Mm-hmm. One of the things they've done that I link to the Bush administration, but I'll be candid that I can't prove it, is after Dick Cheney's most recent trip there, they cracked down on media coverage of violent incidents on the streets and, you know, wherever they find them, saying that they wanted to ban the media from the immediate scene so that they could fully investigate it. And also they started cooking the numbers about civilian casualties. And today's New York Times reports this headline, Iraqi civilian casualties declined in June. Well, that is according to the reports, but I don't believe them. And we know that American casualties are at a record high this quarter. We left June with a little over 100 Americans killed. It was 125 or so in May. And so the surge has been a surge in deaths and a surge in violence. Do you believe these Iraqi civilian casualty figures?
I agree with you, Peter. I do not believe those for an instant, and for the exact reason that you pointed out. Those are completely cooked numbers. It's akin to what the U.S. military did a few months ago when they decided they would conveniently change the way they record a wounded U.S. soldier in Iraq, and immediately the number of wounded soldiers dropped from about 53,000 down to a little over 30,000. So we have the same thing happening here, where civilian casualties are going through the roof. If we go with the leading indicator of that, the Baghdad morgue, the biggest morgue in the entire country, that morgue is so overrun with bodies that they're literally having to leave scores of bodies every single day in the out in broad daylight in Baghdad in 130-degree heat because their coolers are consistently overflowing, literally, with bodies out into the yard. That's the situation with civilian casualties. And another telling indicator of this, every time we see a huge number of U.S. soldiers being killed, as we have in the last quarter, this has been the bloodiest 3 months to date of the entire occupation for U.S. soldiers. I'm talking about even off the charts higher than compared to, say, November and December of 2004 and January 05, where a three-month period that saw the second siege of Fallujah and the January 05 elections. I mean, these are really off-the-chart numbers that people need to understand how extreme the level of violence there is. But when we see such a huge number of U.S. soldier deaths, we can rest assured that the number of civilian casualties is right up there, corresponding right along with it. In addition to that, we have the massive increase of U.S. airstrikes. We're talking about twice the number of airstrikes being conducted in Iraq as compared to this time last year. So all that said, anyone that wants to believe the number of civilian casualties is actually dropping needs to do a little bit more reading.
Yeah. Well, and we're having, as you mentioned, the increase in airstrikes in both Iraq and in Afghanistan. And we're seeing a steady stream of anguished reports coming from Afghanistan, and even Hamid Karzai, our little puppet there, who's nicely dressed, is speaking up and pushing back and saying, really, this has got to stop. And I believe we have as much incidental or accidental carnage of civilians in Iraq, but that it isn't being reported in the same manner, and the local officials don't have a platform to speak to the U.S. media.
Well, you're exactly right, and that's a large problem. I mean, a case in point we can look at directly right now that's ongoing is there's a massive U.S. military operation called Arrowhead Ripper that's actually going after resistance groups inside the city of Baquba, which is about 25 miles or so to the northeast of Baghdad. And as a result of the lack of media coverage there, I mean, we're talking a huge operation where over 10,000 U.S. and Iraqi troops surrounded the city, cut off all the basic services, and started going in neighborhood by neighborhood. Sounds a bit like Fallujah, doesn't it? And so as a result, there's been almost no media coverage of this because, as you said, the military has cracked down very, very openly going after journalists trying to operate in places like this.
The one exception is Michael Gordon, who helped Judy Miller bring us the false stories about Iraqi WMD, is reporting from Baquba for the New York Times. He's been there. Ed Wong came home And it appears that Gordon rotated in his place.
Right. An interesting thing, this is what we can point to with the coverage there, is Michael Gordon was recently interviewed on National Public Radio. And he said in that interview, of course, he didn't write about this, but he said as part of that interview, I'll paraphrase, that he was actually looking at bodies that had been burned by white phosphorus. Well, guess what? Resistance groups in Iraq don't use white phosphorus, but the U.S. military does. So he'll report about that audibly to National Public Radio, but he won't write a story about it for the New York Times, maybe because that's a weapon of mass destruction that, unlike the fictitious ones, here's a very real one right in front of his face, he won't write about it. The same New York Times that...
Dar, we don't use weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We're the good guys.
That's right, exactly.
You haven't been briefed at the point of embedment?
Yeah, well, that's. I guess I missed out on that since I didn't embed, unlike Gordon.
We're going to take a break and return with Dar Jamail. And, Dar, you have a new web address that's shorter, right? D-A-H-R?
D-A-H-R.org.
Dar.org, D-A-H-R.org. Simpler than before, and a great website there where you can find his dispatches and his blog. You can call us toll-free this hour. Dar Jamail is with us for the remainder of this hour, and your calls and comments are welcome. My toll-free number, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. We'll continue in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Everyone wants to know a great hairstylist, and I want to share mine with you. Dallas and Ashley at Malibu by the Sea, 2024 Del Monte Avenue in Monterey. Malibu by the Sea is a full-service salon and bronzing spa. You can slip in for a tan and then have them create a stunning look for you. They perform cuts, color, multidimensional highlights, and the highest quality of human hair extensions. Dallas and Ashley, simply the best, making you look your best. Call them at 383-0807. That's 383-0807.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
All right, everybody, it's Monday Trap Afternoon Traffic. Let's get to it.
And here it is. Let's start off in Santa Cruz County, southbound one at Buena Vista. Injury crash. Paramedics, fire department on scene. Solo vehicle actually flipped over. It's blocking the on-ramp there. And again, fire department crews, CHP, all on scene. Also, Santa Cruz County, southbound one before Buena Vista. Car and a motorcycle involved in a fender bender. They're on the right shoulder. Minor injuries reported. CHP is already there. Looking at Monterey, southbound one at Del Monte Avenue with several crushed boxes in the lanes. Don't hear about that every day. A pickup truck is blocking the right shoulder. It's southbound one before Airport Boulevard in Watsonville. Apparently, maybe close to the right-hand lane. ARCO would like to remind drivers a few things. First, don't forget to buckle up. Second, your dog doesn't qualify you for a carpool lane. Third, never pay too much for gas. ARCO, fill up smart.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 24 minutes after the hour. Your calls and comments are welcome for Dar Jamail. He's with us this hour, and he's got a new web address, same website, but in a simpler address, dahr.org, and that's how you can connect with his real-time reporting and his blog as well, and he also features reporting from some other correspondents. Let me just take this story that's up right here today, Dar, from Ali Al-Fadili. And it's Dateline Fallujah, June 27. Strict curfew and tight security measures have brought difficult living conditions and heightened tempers to residents of this besieged city. Now, wait a minute. Haven't we taken Fallujah twice? And didn't we decimate it? And how could there possibly be any resistance left? That's where we gave the white phosphorus parties, right? The shake and bake?
That's exactly true. But, it just shows kind of the impotence and the ridiculousness of when you go into a place and decide you're going to use a sledgehammer to solve problems, and that's the only effective means that you're going to try to use, that's just not going to get the job done. Because the reality is that these ongoing heavy-handed tactics by the U.S. military, Fallujah being the case in point, not only do they not work, but they turn greater numbers of people over time against you. And this is why from actually before even the April 2004 siege of Fallujah up until the November 2004 siege after that, up until this day, that there's been an average of about 5 attacks every single day on U.S. forces in or just outside of Fallujah, and another 5 attacks every single day in or outside Fallujah on Iraqi forces. And so this over time has built to a situation where once again the U.S. has the city cordoned off. They're cutting basic services. They're using snipers inside the city. And once again, we have yet another cauldron brewing, and the city's ripening up for what could be another U.S., a very large U.S. military offensive.
And we don't have the personnel, particularly trained and reliable Iraqis, to hold these positions once we clear them again.
That's exactly right. And that's a case in point if we go back to Bakuba for a moment, where even U.S. military commanders on the ground are saying that exact thing, that the U.S. military will roll through areas, clear neighborhoods, sometimes large sections of the city, and then literally the second they leave, that area is right back again in resistance fighters control. And it's directly because despite several billion dollars and I don't know how many number of soldiers have been involved in training Iraqi military to come in and do the thing as Bush says, they're going to, as they stand up, we will stand down. Well, that's not going to happen when they're basically working with members of various militias or criminal gangs that are basically saying, thanks for the paycheck, thanks for the weapons, and at night we're going to come attack you with that.
Yeah. Well, and it was a lie, in my view, when he first started to say that Iraq is the central front in the so-called war on terror. And they're just working feverishly to turn that into a true statement by alienating more and more people and making the occupation the focal point of the resistance. And as long as we continue that, we really are building new generations of fighters, whether we want to call them insurgents or terrorists. Those are not my terms. But we're, you know, giving people a very good set of reasons to attack us.
Well, you're exactly right. And this is the great irony of it, where this administration has essentially created their own worst nightmare, where Iraq didn't have terrorists inside of it before, and now it's absolutely crawling with terrorists.
It was a police state.
It was.
It was a heavily locked down police state.
Yeah, one thing you get when you have a brutal dictator is really good security. As long as you don't cross those very clear lines that are drawn, there's very good security. I mean, everyone I know in Iraq said, yeah, under Saddam, we couldn't talk about his regime, but you could walk down any street of the city at 3 a.m. and not have any problem whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And now it's the polar opposite, with hundreds of thousands dead, millions have fled the country altogether, total anarchy and violence everywhere, and really there's no solution to be found. And it's a direct result of the Bush administration rolling in, not having a plan for what would happen after Baghdad fell. The borders are wide open, and now foreign terrorist groups are in charge of actually larger sections of the country, and resistance groups are more widespread, of course, than even the U.S. military.
They didn't have a plan, and they didn't have a clue. And we're paying an awful price, and we're going to pay on the installment plan for many years to come. Dar Jamail with us. We take a break and return. Lines are open if you want to join us. We'll take calls in the next segment at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network. For the second quarter, April through June, the Democratic presidential candidate who has raised the most money is Senator Barack Obama, $31 million for the primary elections. That's $10 million more than his main rival, Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton's $21 million. Pretty impressive, says political analyst Larry Sabato.
It's an incredibly impressive number, and this is the second quarter in which Obama has excelled at fundraising and put the lie to the belief that Hillary Clinton had the Democratic nomination wrapped up.
More after this.
Do you know the difference between the millions of millionaires in this country and you? Simple. They decided they wanted to be millionaires, so they went out and did it. So, do you want to be a millionaire? If the answer is yes, then get ready to write down a number that could change your life forever. Because now you can get a free CD that shows you everything you need to start making the kind of money you deserve with an internet business that virtually runs itself. So you're making cash even while you're sleeping by selling products you don't have to see, store, or even pay for. There are millions of millionaires out there. Don't you want to be one of them? Get the free CD from Internet Speedway and start making money with an internet business that virtually runs itself. For your free CD, call 1-800-220-4614. Deciding to be wealthy is the first step to becoming wealthy. Call now, 1-800-220-4614. The free CD is yours by calling 1-800-220-4614.
In addition to the $31 million Senator Barack Obama has raised for the Democratic primaries, he raised another $1.5 million this quarter for the general election. Larry Sabato, political analyst at the University of Virginia, is quite surprised.
Even though I thought Obama would do very well, I didn't think he'd do this well. I mean, this is really remarkable. And to broaden the number of his donors dramatically using small contributors garnered over the Internet.
Hillary Clinton didn't say how many individual donors she had. Obama had 154,000.
What's really impressive is his money is coming in smaller donations, which means that he can go back again and again to his donors, asking them for another $50 or $100.
Senator Clinton still has some important organizational advantages among the party pros.
She's clearly not going to win either the money game or the enthusiasm game. Instead, she's going to stress her pluses, which mainly involves getting the support of establishment Democrats around the country. This is the Clinton machine in operation.
It's a lot easier to raise money if you're a shoo-in for the nomination. That's clearly not the case, says Sabato.
I think what's important is that this really destroys the hardening conventional wisdom that somehow Hillary Clinton had the Democratic nomination wrapped up. She does not. This is going to be a real race.
The Osgood File. Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Those who start wars, never fight them. Those who fight wars, they never like them. Those who write laws, they can't recite them. And those of us who just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, it's time.
Oh, it's time. Well past the time.
It's time to go home. To take our boys away, no. To take our girls away, no.
Our music of the moment. Michael Fronte and Spearhead, It's Time to Go Home. If you haven't picked it up yet, it's a powerful CD called Yell Fire, and it's one of my favorites these days in my iPod. Dar Jamail is with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show for another 30 minutes or so. You're welcome to call at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Dar, before we take some phone calls here, I wanted to ask you to update us because you have been our key correspondent on the issues of refugees from Iraq. And this goes largely unreported in the American media. We have a very sorry record of admitting Iraqis, even collaborators, to save their hides from retribution inside the cauldron of Iraq. And we turn a blind eye to it, and we don't even appear to be funneling money to some of the neighboring countries most impacted by the flood of refugees.
That's, I'm really glad you bring that up, because the, you know, even since last time I spoke with you about this catastrophe, I could update the numbers where the minimum number now of Iraqi refugees in Syria alone is 1.4 million. In Jordan, it's a little bit more than last time I reported to you. I think I reported 800,000. Now it's about 900,000. But we have a situation where the number coming across the border into Syria, which is the only country on the globe that is maintains an open-door policy for Iraqis, continues to stay the same between 30 and 50,000. I mean, very, very large number of people every month continue to abandon their country altogether. And the contrasted to what the Bush administration has done to alleviate the suffering of these people, you know, we have a country like Syria whose economy is a joke compared to that of our country. They had 20% unemployment before this catastrophe even began, and they're desperate for help, and they're not getting any whatsoever from the Bush administration. Instead, since March 2003, when the month the war was launched, this administration has issued visas to 466 Iraqis. So 466 people have been admitted entrance into this country.
That's Alawi and his family, right?
Just about, you know, and a few friends, and that's about it.
Alawi.
That's about it, because, you know, the reality is we're talking about over 4 million people now that are refugees either inside or outside of Iraq. So 466. I mean, this is a slap in the face. This is an insult. And then under pressure from the UN earlier this year, they admitted they're going to issue 7,000 more visas to Iraqis. But, of course, one of the criteria is this is only to Iraqis that have worked with the U.S. military in Iraq, so i.e. collaborators.
Now, wait a minute. Are we giving them amnesty?
Well, they won't. Absolutely not. They would no way call it amnesty. No way. And they're making sure. I want to add to this. I actually just have been working on a story with an Iraqi colleague of mine over in Berkeley. And this is a story about people who've worked as translators for the U.S. military. And one of the criteria for these people who have had literal death threats and have either had to flee their homes or literally stay in their homes and never leave at all, one of the criteria for them to get one of these visas is they have to get a letter of recommendation from one of the very few U.S. generals inside of Iraq. So what are the odds that some guy working as a translator for the U.S. military can go get a nice letter of recommendation from a general that he's buddies with in Baghdad? It's just not going to happen, is my point.
So is there any organized effort? There is a lot of focus on Darfur, and to the extent that people care about that, I applaud them. The U.S. isn't doing diddly about it, and we go back and forth between making some unctuous statements and ignoring the issue further. But is there any regional response? Is there any action from the UN's humanitarian operations?
Well, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, UNHCR, they're doing absolutely what they can, and they had a budget in the region of $700,000 in 06 and then 07. That got bumped up to $16 million. But that we're still talking about, with Iraqi refugees alone, that works out to about $13 per refugee. That does not include UNHCR overhead. That does not include other refugees there, which, of course, there's refugees from Palestine, from Somalia, I mean, from Afghanistan, even there in Syria. It's amazing. I mean, there's refugees from all over. So how far is that $13 going to go? And so as a result, Jordan, for example, is complaining that they've so far had to spend $1 billion to deal with almost a million Iraqi refugees there, and they're not getting any help. And so they're having a conference actually later on this month to try to generate some support. But while they might get some from the UN, if I was a Jordanian official in the government, I wouldn't be holding my breath from aid from the Bush administration.
And, you know, we're number one on the 17-mile drive in Pebble Beach, where there's some multimillionaires. If any of them want to try to help Iraqi refugees through an NGO, is there one you can recommend?
Well, I think supporting UNHCR or the group Refugees International, they're there on the ground. Those are two just off the top of my head. And another that I would highly recommend would be the Red Crescent in Syria. They're actually doing a lot of work on the ground, a legitimate organization. People could certainly support them.
All right. Let's go to the calls now. Dave and Eureka, thanks for holding. You're on the air, Dave.
Well, another very informative program, Peter. And, Dar, I feel the need from time to time to put out a logic that I find inescapable, and that is that everything about this war was calculated lies, trumped up evidence, and it went back to the earliest days of PNAC. They planned for this invasion, and the only thing about it that makes sense to me is that it is extremely profitable to those people who Bush refers to as his clique,
his base, haves and the have-mores.
The haves and the have-mores, and they are making so much out of this. They're over there dividing up the oil assets of the country among themselves. They are bankrupting this country, putting money in their pockets. Halliburton, Bechtel, Lockheed Martin, that whole clique is making a fortune while our country is going more and more trillions into debt. So any discussion of tactics or strategy or maneuvering over there is to me irrelevant. If I'm seeing this right, and I fear I am, that's end of the story. That's what we got to be fighting this thing.
All right. Let's get a comment. Thank you, Dave. Go ahead, Dar.
I think that Dave brought up excellent points. I think it'd be futile to try to argue any of those. I think that the reality is that my opinion of what these people's goal was, and you're right. I mean, this invasion of Iraq was planned even before George Bush took office. Citing the Project for the New American Century is exactly right on. I do believe that these people were so in their own reality of listening to the Chalabis and the people like that, that they really believed they were going to roll into Baghdad, be welcomed, and just start building McDonald's and Walmarts and call it good as they started to get momentum up for Syria or Iran. Be that as it may, I think you're right. I think it's a total catastrophe. It is absolutely hell-bent on continuing, because all we have to do is look at the profits of the Lockheed Martins, the Halliburtons, the Blackwaters, all of these companies that are literally making a killing, literally profiting off of the more blood that flows in Iraq, the more money they're making, whether that's the blood of the Iraqi people or the blood of U.S. soldiers and reservists that are over there. And I think that that's what we face here in the United States when we talk about how are we going to end this. That's where I think books like, for example, Jeremy Scahill's book on Blackwater, pick up that book, learn about this company, and start figuring out ways maybe people here could organize that would start hampering companies like that from making profits. Now, what that might look like on the ground, I don't know. But I think picking a particular company and basically setting up boycotts or doing organizing around these people that are literally profiting from the chaos and violence in Iraq would be a suggestion I would start with.
And this isn't directly related, but I can't resist. The business section of the New York Times today reports that the Carlyle Group is in discussions to launder its war profits by buying the Virgin Media Group from Richard Branson for about $19 billion. So just tuck that away in your little folder somewhere. Mark in Port Orford, Oregon, you're next. Thanks for your call.
Yes, well, my question for Dar dovetails quite nicely on the end of Dave's comments, because I was going to ask Dar if he's considered the fact that maybe a lot of these actions and these maneuvers the planning that took place doesn't represent incompetence. In fact, what it represents is a win-win situation for the neocons, because if by some stroke of luck operations are successful and there is some modicum of peace that takes place, then they can claim success and they can request that the American people continue to fund their efforts, because obviously it's successful. If it's not successful, then you have the endless war scenario that probably appeals to a mind like Dick Cheney's, where, again, the military industrialists have a windfall because there's endless war and there's endless need for military contracts. So how about looking at it as a win-win and not maybe making the mistake of saying that these guys are incompetent? They're nefarious and evil, perhaps, and greedy, but I don't know if incompetent is the right word.
So then, Mark, should we all just gather up our cash and buy shares of Halliburton so we can go to the annual meeting and vote ourselves onto the board?
I think we should, you've heard this before, but it's the direct approach. I think we should gather up our cash by refusing to pay a portion of our taxes.
All right. Interesting point. Thank you, Mark. You got a comment, Dar?
Well, I completely agree that all the aforementioned companies, all of the aforementioned politicians are getting out like bandits out of this whole situation. But as I said before, I really do believe that these people were, the Bushes and the Cheneys were delusional enough to think that the situation was going to go rather swimmingly for them when they rolled into Baghdad. And then things have, of course, turned south. Because I think that they were going to go into Baghdad and then spend a little bit of time building up propaganda to go into either Syria or Iran. I think they still probably will go into one or either or both of those countries before the end of this particular administration. But I think that they would have liked to have seen it go a little bit easier and cost a little bit fewer U.S. troops' lives. But that's, this is all kind of conjecture and neither here nor there at this point. The reality is that they're there. These bases are permanent. They have no plans to go anywhere. The only way that this administration or future U.S. administrations are going to leave the situation in Iraq is if they're forced to by both the Iraqi resistance on the ground there and a resistance here in this country.
We're going to take a break and return with Dar Jamil next. I want to ask him about Iran and about the reports by the U.S. of Iranian shipments of arms and training of fighters that are in Iraq. And if time permits, we'll also get his thoughts on the latest conflict in the Middle East along the Gaza Strip there, the problems between Fatah and Hamas, and their mutual problems with Israel. That's next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly, Thinker Toys, with two beautiful stores on the Monterey Peninsula, has an incredible selection of fun and educational toys, games, books, and art supplies for infants to teens. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys owner Mark Phillips and his experienced staff have been serving the parents and children of the Central Coast. They can help you choose the perfect gift for the special child in your life. Join Thinker Toys' three generations of satisfied customers, and you'll see why Thinker Toys is the most fun place to shop on the Monterey Peninsula. Open every day. Thinker Toys is at the corner of San Carlos and 7th in Carmel by the Sea, and next to Starbucks in the Del Monte Center in Monterey. You can also order by phone, 831-624-0441. That's 624-0441. Or browse at thinkertoys.com.
All right, folks, here we go. Time for traffic. And we're going to start off with a problem in Twin Lakes. They're calling this 14th at Merrill. Backhoe apparently is blocking the roadway there. Only information we have at this point. Hollister, Highway 25, right at, let's see, Hunter. That's Hunter Lane. It's a grass fire burning on the right shoulder. The fire department is just arriving on scene, so the fire is certainly not out at this point. Carmel Valley, Cachagua, at Carmel Valley Road, we have an accident report there. CHP on the way to the scene. Santa Cruz County, Highway 1, southbound at Buena Vista. Emergency crews on the scene of an accident there. A solo vehicle overturned, blocking the on-ramp. And again, paramedics present. This report brought to you by Great America. Now everyone is a kid at Great America now through July 6th. Everyone who wears red, white, and blue gets in for the...
Major combat operations ended, of course, in May of 2003. And the bloody occupation of Iraq continues. I'm Peter B. Collins. With me is Dar Jamil. His new web address to the same website is dahrdar.org, and I invite you to stop by. He's got a book coming out this fall, and we'll certainly, when it's released, have him on the program to talk about that. And he'll be doing some speaking engagements in our listening areas, so we'll support those as well. Dar, I wanted to ask you next about this sequence of accusations coming from the U.S. military about Iran's role in supplying munitions that are killing Americans in Iraq, these shaped explosive devices, and also the allegation that they are training fighters who are then shipped into Iraq. Now, I don't find either of these particularly surprising. We are, the U.S. is the world's number one arms supplier, and I view Iran as a regional supplier of arms to those who wish to buy them. And the fact that they're showing up in Iraq is no more surprising that the Kalashnikov, which is not made in Iraq, is the weapon of choice there. Is this simply part of Dick Cheney's drumbeat to try to demonize Iran as much as possible? Not that they need our help, but to make it a juicy target and to justify military assaults on Iran?
I think that's exactly, that is precisely what this administration is trying to do. If we just look back at the train of propaganda that's been coming out of this administration to justify military adventures against Iran, i.e. a massive aerial bombardment is what they keep talking about. And the reality is, if we, you know, just a couple of months ago, it was, as you said, it was a certain type of shaped charge that was coming out of Iran that they were finding in Iraq, and even U.S. generals on the ground in Iraq totally blew that load of BS out of the water. And then now it's, oh, but Iran's now training fighters, and Hezbollah is training fighters, you know, relying on the fact that people assume that Hezbollah is nothing more than a puppet of Iran, which is simply not the case, but that the resistance in Iraq actually needs any funding or backing from Iran. It absolutely does not. The reality is that if people have any basic understanding of the political situation on the ground in Iraq, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but the Supreme Council, the party that was previously known as Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq, is totally backed by Iran. Maliki and the people with Skiri, or the party formerly known as Skiri, in the government are very much backed by Iran. And so really we have a situation where both Iran and the U.S. are keen on having something take place in Iraq that is being called by the conservative Brookings Institute as sort of a soft partition, where they want to have southern Iraq basically kind of partitioned away from Baghdad, and then the Kurdish-controlled north kind of partitioned away from Baghdad, so that therefore the U.S. would be able to more easily control and manipulate the oil in those regions. Mm-hmm. But the southern part of Iraq to be partitioned away and be more under the control of Iran, why would it behoove Iran to be training people in that area of the country to go against U.S. forces? Because it's Sadr's groups who's been going after the forces. He's more nationalistic. He's more for a unified Iraq. So really, just this basic political understanding of some of the machinations going on in the country, it doesn't really lead any credibility whatsoever to these statements being made. And, of course, these aren't backed by anything like proof or evidence, just like the weapons of mass destruction claims before the invasion was launched weren't backed by anything that resembled fact or proof or documents or anything like this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to acknowledge that I promised to talk about Israel and Palestine, but I'm going to save that for another day. Because one thing we haven't discussed that I think is very important is the push by the U.S. to impose an oil-sharing law on Iraq and the resistance that has been shown by the parliament. And as Antonio Yuhas and Raed Jarar have pointed out on this program before, Democrats appear to be blindly supporting this so-called benchmark to force the Iraqis, first and foremost, to permit non-Iraqi oil companies, read U.S.-based multinationals, to exploit the resources, and that there would be a split of the net proceeds. And I underscore net for those who know a little bit about Hollywood accounting. And so this is a misguided set of proposals framed by the Bush administration to enhance the interests of their oil patch buddies. And the Democrats appear to think that this is either a benign or a positive set of issues that the Iraqis should simply embrace and let us move on.
Well, that's right. And another key element to this equation is the Iraqi unions and the Iraqi oil unions in southern Iraq, is that we have the leadership there who's in charge of basically between 15 and 16,000 members has waged his own sort of resistance against this appeasing of the Western oil companies and the laws that they're trying to force through the Iraqi parliament. So on top of some of the members, in fact, I believe it's over 50% of the members of the parliament element that oppose this, which is really one of the only things keeping it from happening so far, is this oil union. I mean, this is a, they've made some quite radical statements where the leader of the union, with just within the last month, basically said, we're willing to die to keep Iraqi oil for Iraqis. We're not going to let anyone take it. We will go on strike. We will do whatever is absolutely necessary to keep Western oil companies from getting their hands on this oil. This is our sole main resource. This is the only hope we have of rebuilding this country, and we're going to do everything in our power to make sure that that happens.
And there are very few voices in this country speaking up, either questioning or opposing this oil grab policy.
Very much so, and I think it's an important point for people to remember, especially as the presidential elections for 08 start to really, or the campaigns start to really gear up for the elections, is that the mainstream Democrat parties, what are they doing to keep Iraqi oil in Iraqis' hands? I would argue that people like Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and John Edwards and people of this ilk, that their policies regarding Iraq withdrawal and Iraqi oil laws is basically a mirror of that of the Bush administration.
Yeah, and it is, again, stunning that we have progressive voices speaking up about this. But and Dennis Kucinich, I think, raises the issue, but he's been marginalized by the media because he hasn't raised enough money and doesn't show up in the polls as a top-tier candidate.
Right, exactly. But the reality is he's the voice in the wilderness representing all of us that, you know, is in favor of a immediate withdrawal, reparations being paid to Iraqis. I mean, basically, he is the sole person out there with a legitimate shot at least even running for president that is representing the majority of the people. And personally, I feel that, you know, writing him off as, oh, well, he's not charismatic enough or he doesn't have enough money. I mean, bottom line, so what? If people know he's there and he's representing what most people want, why shouldn't he get the most votes for president?
Well, and we got my buddy Mike Gravel to run to make Dennis Kucinich appear more legit. Well, Dar, it's a pleasure to be here with you. I want to thank you for joining us today. We'll talk again soon, and keep us posted on your various activities, will you?
Will do, Peter, and always a pleasure.
Dar Jamail, the new web address, same website, dahr.org, dar.org. Coming up next, Reverend Billy just got out of jail for reciting the First Amendment in a public space in New York, and he'll kick off our free speech zone. We'll talk about Scooter Libby's commutation, too. That's next.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. A surprise from President Bush late today, he commuted Scooter Libby's prison sentence. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
All along, the White House had made the case that President Bush would not intervene in the Libby matter so long as an appeal was underway. But because a judge ruled that Libby could not delay the start of his prison term while the appeal was being adjudicated, the president decided to intervene. He commuted the jail term that Libby was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison, but he left a $250,000 fine and 2 years of probation in place.
Libby, former chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, was convicted of perjury and obstructing the investigation of the leak that exposed Valerie Plame Wilson as a CIA officer. CBS News chief legal analyst Andrew Cohen calls the commutation a compromise.
President Bush gets to spare his former colleague at the White House, Louis Libby, from a prison sentence, but he also can turn to the American people and say, listen, I didn't pardon him for the crimes. He's still a convicted felon until and unless the appeals court says otherwise. I think this is the White House trying to have the best of both worlds.
Democrats in Congress are outraged. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin says even Paris Hilton had to go to jail. No one in this administration should be above the law. The attempts to kill and maim with car bombs in London and Glasgow may have originated with members of the healing profession. CBS News correspondent Sheila McVicker has the latest on the investigation.
Eight people are now in custody. Six of those arrested are doctors. The eighth arrest took place today in Australia. That person is also a doctor, someone who left the UK in recent months. Increasingly, investigators believe that this was not a casual network of people who came together, that this was a group of people who were recruited and sent to this country with the intention of carrying out terrorist acts.
Most, if not all, of the doctors are originally from the Middle East. The U.S.-Russia summit in Kennebunkport, Maine, wrapped up today, and President Bush had warm words for his guests.
One thing I found about Vladimir Putin is that he is consistent, transparent, honest, and is an easy man to discuss, our opportunities and problems with.
Putin offered a new proposal to counter the U.S. plan to put missile defense systems in Eastern Europe. Mr. Bush called it very sincere and innovative. A motorboat patrols the flooded streets of Wichita Falls, Texas, one of many communities that have been inundated with rain. Another is Marble Falls, Texas, where Richard Whitman is the mayor.
There are trees piled up everywhere. There are cars in the creeks. There is debris littering all of the waterways.
A malfunction at a refinery spilled 42,000 gallons of crude oil into the swollen Verdigris River in Kansas. On Wall Street, the Dow up 126 points. This is CBS News.
Get the good stuff.
This is Michael Waltrip here to let you know about a great new product at Napa. Napa now has 3M Performance Finish, a superior new waxing solution that actually bonds to your car's paint surface, providing long-lasting and durable paint protection, not to mention a deep gloss finish that will be the envy of all your neighbors. Protect your car today with 3M Performance Finish, just $12.49 at Napa.
Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
Do you have a big presentation coming up? Need great-looking documents done right and on time? The Office Depot Design Print and Ship Depot will take care of it. Only at Office Depot will you find Xerox-certified print specialists to make sure your job is done right, guaranteed. Stop by an Office Depot store or visit us online 24/7 to request professionally prepared documents. Xerox-certified print specialists, only at Office Depot, where we guarantee your documents are done right.
A new proposal on fuel economy standards is being considered in Congress, and this one, reports CBS News correspondent John Harchi, has the backing of carmakers.
The Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers, which represents key import and domestic car companies, is throwing its support to a House proposal that would boost fuel economy to 32 mpg by 2022. The automakers oppose the proposal that was adopted by the Senate. It would require 35 mpg by 2020. The Auto Alliance calls the 32 miles per gallon figure a rational increase that would help a cross-section of consumers and would be achievable.
If the House passes this proposal, the final numbers in the energy bill will have to be negotiated with the Senate. Linda Hatch was tempted. The part-time makeup artist and deli clerk found $20,000 cash in a deposit tube at her bank's drive-up, but she walked right into the bank and turned it over. As she explained later, it's not enough money to move to Mexico. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Hi, what can I get you, sir?
I'll have a tall cappuccino with a touch of cinnamon and some peace of mind, please.
You got it.
What if you could buy peace of mind? Well, you can with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury certified pre-owned vehicles, because we notice everything. Everyone must pass a 115-point inspection. You even get a vehicle history report, and it's all backed by our 6-year, 75,000-mile warranty coverage. Now that's peace of mind.
Oh, and I'll have some confidence, too.
See your dealer for limited warranty coverage details or visit FordCPO.com.
Hi, I'm Smokey, and this is my new friend, Ernie.
Hi.
Ernie wants to be a biker.
Sure do.
Okay, just calm down, Ernie. First, you need a bike. Then you need Geico Motorcycle Insurance. They cover most kinds of bikes and have money-saving discounts. And finally, you'll need a nickname. Something that suits you, like, I don't know, Fuzzy Bunny.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Too late. It's already stuck, Fuzzy.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're in the free speech zone. Your calls and comments are welcome. Topic A is, just a few hours ago, President Bush took time out from his love fest with Vladimir Putin to announce that he has commuted the sentence of Scooter Libby. Not a big surprise. Why not just pardon the SOB? What do you got to lose, Bush? So Scooter Libby can celebrate his independence and freedom on Independence Day this Wednesday. But the Reverend Billy is free again after being incarcerated by the New York City Police Department for exercising his First Amendment rights in a very fundamental way. He was found in public reciting the First Amendment. And they locked him up for a contrived charge of harassment of a public official. The Reverend Billy joins us right now. Billy, how you doing?
Peter B.
How are you, brother?
Oh, glad to talk with you today.
Let me just ask you first and foremost to hold up your wrists to the telephone. Did they injure your wrists with either the plastic handcuffs or the real gnarly metal ones?
It was the metal variety this time.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe it's because the commissioners and lieutenants, the brass, were involved. So maybe the brass had to have.
Now, set the scene
cuff.
For us. This was last week, and you were at Union Square?
It was Friday. Friday, we have a critical mass bicycle parade through Manhattan, a celebration of non-polluting transportation.
Uh-huh.
I know you also have in San Francisco and Santa Monica and Seattle. Critical mass is something that's in many cities.
You're right.
And now as we poison the earth and get these unmistakable signals from the earth, the water, the air, it's more important than ever to get on our bicycles and stop the cars and trucks, hand out the information.
Mm-hmm.
But the bicyclists in New York at hallowed ground, Union Square, our speaker's corner in New York.
Right.
They've just sort of got an erotic fetish. They fetishize the bicyclists. And this Friday, there were 150 cops there. They were just all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And Savitri, my friend and partner, and I had just read that day that the restrictions, these fear policies that have been mounting after 9/11, that we had a new one. Which is that you can't have a continuous, you know, filming camera on a tripod for more than 30 minutes.
Oh, really?
That's the latest. So that we just found out about that day, and we're just becoming dizzy with anger. Something had to give. And when we got to our bicycle parade and found this military demonstration of copdom, in the middle of it was this circle of lieutenants and commissioners and captains kind of presiding over these unarmed bicyclists like dons, like mobsters.
Mm-hmm.
We just sort of lost it. And we started reciting, of course, I was in my Reverend Billy outfit with the big long megaphone.
Mm-hmm.
We started reciting those 44 beautiful words, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, prohibiting the free expression thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and petition the government for redress of grievances. Not quite like that. It was more like, Congress shall make no law. We preached it, baby.
I'll bet
and
you
we
did,
were
Billy.
Just, we were just, yeah, we preached it. And we preached it right at this circle of NYPD brass. And they had to move the meeting a little bit. They came out and they warned us about that we were bothering them. Hallelujah. And then after a while there was a gathering. We had a crowd. And you know how important that is to a pulpit pounding preacher like myself.
Oh, yeah. You love a crowd.
All we did was just, that's all we did. We just kept repeating the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt the cuffs. And I was off to the tombs for 20 hours.
And they decided that you were such a threat that they couldn't cite and release you, as so often they do for these kinds of lifestyle crimes or whatever you call it. They detained you under a specious charge of harassment of a public official?
Well, what they eventually charged us with, they should have signed me out of the precinct house. But what they probably did is they had a more serious charge temporarily just to get me down into the tombs.
Mm-hmm.
The tombs are an amazing thing. I'm sure not unlike other prisons in the United States, but it's an honesty developing moment to just go down under 100 Center Street. It's fluorescent light all the time. 95% of the people, that's my guess, are black or Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are kids. What they do is they sweep through the projects, and they just pick up these kids. And it's an 85-degree weather when they arrest them. It's freezing in the tombs. And you watch all these young people trying to wrap themselves in their T-shirts in such a way that they might get some derive some warmth from their arms being up against their rib cages.
Right.
It's a not-so-unsubtle torture, I think. I think you could use that word now that we know that happens in our prison systems.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just good for me to be there once in a while. It keeps me straight. It puts my feet in the ground.
Now, Reverend Billy, when you go to the tombs and it's refrigerated down there to ice cold condition, and even the male nipple gets really hard, is there a Starbucks franchise there to sell you some overpriced coffee to help keep you warm and alert?
Well, given the sweatshop history of Starbucks and how they don't pay for their coffee, the condition of people who are working in the coffee groves for them, I was surprised they didn't have some coffee groves down there underground. But, some hydroponic coffee trees. But, no, the Starbucks are, they're up on the surface up in this layered world of hells. Mm-hmm. They're up on the surface.
Now, Billy,
I'm just glad to be out of prison, and this morning we went back to the place where we took the TV cameras and the AP and the Times. We went back to this spot where, the First Amendment rights were Reverend Billy's First Amendment right to recite the First Amendment was violated.
Yeah.
It's just so important for us in New York now to stop being afraid. It's been 6 years since 9/11. We're not developing more safety by surveilling everybody within an inch of their lives, by making rules about cameras, about shouting. They have a shouting noise ordinance now. All completely subjective. It's up to the cop who witnesses the shout.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got garbage trucks that'll blow your ears out here. It's just become so restrictive. It evolves out of the Giuliani era. But
now let me just ask you.
Mike Bloomberg is, although he wants to be a centrist and wants to be some sort of alternative to the old style Republican thugs.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, he's letting this happen, and we're hoping that it becomes more and more of an embarrassment as it becomes widely disseminated. This imagery of reciting the First Amendment and getting arrested.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're just hoping that there are changes here. We need to have the First Amendment now in our city. We need the playfulness and trust, the public personating, the filling up of your person, the shouting, the gestures. We're New York. We're sassy. We respect each other, but not until after there have been some terrible insults. All right? Hallelujah.
Reverend Billy, just for...
let us be New Yorkers, and maybe there'll be some more safety on the streets.
And let me just ask you this for comparative purposes. Recently, the Today Show brought the Bon Jovi band out of mothballs, and they played to a huge crowd there at Rockefeller Center. And right there on my morning TV show, I heard screaming. And I want to know if the cops crack down on the Bon Jovi fans the way they do on lefties reciting the First Amendment.
No. As we were getting arrested, or I was getting arrested at Union Square, this hallowed ground for American free expression, where Emma Goldman called that general strike before World War One, when all the immigrant young women left their sweatshop jobs and surrounded her by the thousands, and her permit was the First Amendment. I was there in that place, being arrested on these, you know, creative charges, and across the street there was this long line around the block, people waiting to buy their iPhones.
Oh wow.
You know, hundreds and hundreds of people blocking traffic, blocking pedestrians. But there's a double standard for something that's driving a dollar. We have to reopen public space. We have to reopen public space. And the First Amendment, it's one sentence with five freedoms. It was written for a reason, and it has survived and feels so great today for a reason. It lets the human being, the family, the tribe, the community make its own change. It leaves us in our bodies. It leaves us with our relationships and our music and our language, our way of enjoying life. And it says, you know what? You can't force religious fundamentalism on these people. You can't, you cannot censor their speech or their press. You must let them peaceably assemble. And you must let them change the government, petition the government for change if they feel that there needs to be change.
Well, Reverend Billy, thank you for leading the charge. Thank you for taking the hit and spending a night in the tombs. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Will you keep up the fight?
Oh, well, this is what makes life worth living. I mean, this makes life possible. The First Amendment. The fear stops here. Why are we sure the fear stops here? Because we're living inside the First Amendment. Here we are. That's our protection.
Thank you, brother. Thank
Amen.
You, Reverend Billy. The website is revbilly.com. We'll talk to you again soon.
Hallelujah.
He's free, and he's fighting for our First Amendment rights. Now, I want you to use your First Amendment right. I've got three lines open here in the free speech zone. You can call about Scooter Libby, any other issue in the news. Let us know your thoughts, but do not go silent. 888-573-8372. That's 1-888-5-PETER-B.
I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Carmel's community bookstore, The Pilgrim's Way, is a locally owned independent bookstore and has been for nearly 40 years.
Discover for yourself our intimate and unique setting, including the Secret Garden, known locally as a hidden treasure in downtown Carmel. Our friendly staff at Pilgrim's Way are available to assist you with any personal needs or gift buying. And our book selection offers the best of personal development, local interest, bestsellers, novels, children's, and metaphysical, plus much, much more. We have great music and healing tools, cards, and garden statuary.
Visit us at www.pilgrimsway.com or call 624-4955 or visit the Pilgrim's Way, Carmel's only bookstore, and the Secret Garden on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in Carmel.
Okay, you want a website? What next? A lot of people can do the job, but you want innovation at a reasonable price. You want Dale Edward. Dale builds amazing websites with streaming video. Being a pro photographer ensures high-quality content. Websites, wedding, and special events photography, all at a reasonable price. Go to DaleEdward.com or call 277-9847. That's 277-9847.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
All right, taking a look at traffic here in the Monterey Salinas area. Let's take a look at the Watsonville San Juan Road at Murray Crossing. We have an accident on the right shoulder. Two vehicles involved in this crash at this point. Also want to mention that we do have CHP on scene in Twin Lakes. That's 14th Avenue at Merrill. We do have a backhoe apparently blocking the roadway there. Really the only information we have at this point. Also looking at Carmel Valley. It's Cal Agua at East Carmel. It's a solo vehicle. The vehicle overturned and landed on its roof. Now, the good news, only minor injuries being reported. Northbound and southbound 17 looking good. Now, everyone's a kid at Great America now through the July 6th. Everyone who wears red, white, and blue gets in for the kids' price of $29.95. See PGAthrills.com for details. That's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. I have a couple of lines open here in the free speech zone. Reverend Billy's out there fighting for your First Amendment rights, so don't let him go to waste. 888-573-8372. That's 1-888-5-PETER-B. And there's a guy named Mark Perkle from the Bay Area who writes letters to the editor and often copies me on them. He's concise, pithy, and powerful. And today he wrote, in honor of the commutation of the sentence of Scooter Libby by Bush, he said, September 30th, 2003, Bush told reporters in Chicago, "If there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. And if the person has violated the law, the person will be taken care of." Today, Bush made good on his promise and took care of Scooter Libby by commuting his sentence. Unfortunately, there's only one remedy for a president who commutes the sentence of someone who lied to cover up for his own crimes, and that's impeachment. But the Republicans are standing in the way and allowing Bush to continue to be lawless. I'm Mark Perkle, and I approved this message. That's his comment. We just heard from Reverend Billy. Now we've got Billy Sunshine. It's a back-to-back Billy moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Hi, Billy.
Hey, Billy. We should go for only Billy's for the hour. What do you say?
I don't
have enough of them.
I don't know if I have enough in my within the sound of my voice.
Probably true.
But we'll find out. And by the way, if another Billy surfaces, you're welcome to call, and I will reward you because I just got an extra DVD copy of the new documentary by Norman Solomon called War Made Easy. And so the next Billy who calls, I'll send that along to him. How's that for a prize?
Very good. And I'm always one Billy too late in my life.
So what do you think about Scooter's commuter?
It makes me crazy. Well, you know, one thing you can say for the Republicans is that, you know, they're getting better at this. You know, the last time people actually went to jail for the cover-up, this cover-up they got away with.
Yeah, they did.
How's your memory? You have a good memory?
Pretty good, yeah.
Because there's a point of personal privilege. On the day that Scooter Libby did not testify, I came on and we discussed this, and I said at the time, this is how the cover-up works.
Yeah.
There's only one way, that is that he was promised a pardon. I called it a pardon. I didn't know about the commutation. You know?
Right.
And, you know, because otherwise that's the way you get these criminals. They're facing a sentence, and so they roll over. But if you know you're not facing a sentence, to repeat what we said a year ago, oh, man.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, and he set an example here that anybody else who is convicted of lawbreaking from the Bush administration can expect to be taken care of.
Oh, by the way, that is an exact quote. Those were, he did say, taken care of.
Yes, he
I
did.
At the time, noticing it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've all been taken care of, too.
Compassionate conservative. We missed the. He didn't say compassionate conservative. He said compassionate too conservative.
I missed that little preposition in there. You know, you got to listen carefully.
I'm telling you, it's tough. When you're talking to traitors and sleazy people, you got to listen to every word.
Yeah.
And that's what this president is. And that's what a lot of people from this administration is. And that was to say the supporters, of the people who want to buy this kind of thing, who want to shove down our throats that there isn't equal justice, it's like I've been saying to you for a long time, it's over.
Wish I had something to fire back with here, Billy. Thanks for your call today.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. Now to Laird in Eureka. Hello, Laird.
Hi, Peter.
How you doing today?
This is not Billy.
Okay. And you can't pull the Cheney thing on me again. I did send you the disc in the
Excellent.
Mail. Went out on Friday, so watch for a representative of the Postal Service to deliver it soon.
I am one.
Oh, you am?
Yeah.
If I'd known that, I wouldn't have put a stamp on it.
First of all, pardon's not off the table. This is not over.
Okay, what do you mean?
I mean that Bush will pardon him eventually.
Oh, I see. Yeah, maybe at the end of the administration.
Right. And I guarantee you he's not going to be in any hurry to pay that fine.
But why bother with a two-stage approach here, Laird? Bush is going to take the same
the
hit. Well, he's going to take the same hit for a commutation as he would a pardon.
But he'll be closer to the elections and more out of harm's way and so forth.
But it's absolute authority. He, you know, nobody can second guess him. We can criticize it all we want, but there's no recourse. So why bother with this, kind of half step? I don't get it.
Well, I just, it's a gut feeling. Maybe I'm wrong. Actually, it's not what I called for, though.
Okay, go ahead.
I am tired of people bashing the media.
Okay, like where? You mean Ann Coulter?
All right. let me give you a little, story, a little example here.
Make it quick. I got 20 seconds. Go ahead.
Oh, well, we can't do it in 20 seconds. Look, people need to wake up and pay attention. They can't keep using the media for an excuse. The information is there. I listen to your show, and I keep saying to myself, I knew that. I knew that. I knew that. And, you know, I'll tell you a secret. I'm not that smart.
Thank you, Laird. I appreciate your point. Thanks for your call today. More coming up in a moment. I'm Peter B. Collins, 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Carmel Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Carmel Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Carmel Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Carmel Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmel Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Carmel Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
We were looking for an inclusive community, so we joined a Unitarian Universalist church where we can really live our values.
Did you know the American Red Cross, the League of Women Voters, the ACLU, and the SPCA were all founded by Unitarians or Universalists?
Imagine a denomination that walks its talk. When Martin Luther King Jr. appealed to clergy to join protesters at Selma, Alabama, more than one-third of the Unitarian Universalist parish ministers answered his call.
And Unitarian Universalists are still fighting for justice today. We're speaking up everywhere for marriage equality, for reproductive rights, for the environment, and for our civil liberties.
A denomination with progressive values makes a difference in today's world. Unitarian Universalists. Come visit our church on the Monterey Peninsula at 490 Aguajito Road at the top of Carmel Hill. Visit our website, uucmp.org, or call 624-7404.
Tomorrow Matters, the premier local radio program for matching the global problems of today with the solutions for a better tomorrow. Hosted by me, Deborah Lindsay, Monday to Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. I'll bring in the guests and you call in with your questions and ideas. And we'll collectively work to set the standards for a more sustainable future. And we're doing it five times a week. Join me, Deborah Lindsay, right here on KRXA 540 a.m. for Tomorrow Matters. Weekdays at 2, because for all of us, tomorrow really matters.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Scooter got Bush the commuter. I got to work on this one. Scooter Libby, a certified liar, although his pants never caught fire, to my knowledge, had his sentence commuted today, just as Judge Walton was insisting that he suit up and report to jail, federal prison, in fact. And this was an action that occurred as Bush interrupted his love fest at Kennebunkport with Vladimir Putin. And I guess in between fishing expeditions, he signed a document and the White House announced that the sentence has been commuted, but Libby will be required to have somebody else pay the $250,000 fine for him, and he goes on 2 years probation. Likely he will lose his law license, so he does not get off entirely unscathed, but the cover-up is intact, and Libby appeared to have played his cards correctly. Jason Leopold joins us now. I called him to ask him for a quick comment today, because he's been our go-to guy on the CIA leak case from the beginning. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Sure, Peter. Good to be with you. And I don't think that this is much of a surprise. I think that the big surprise is that it wasn't a full-on pardon.
Yeah, me too.
Which could still, need to remind people that that still could happen when Bush leaves office.
Sure, he could give him a free upgrade.
Yeah, he could. Exactly. Great way to, great way to describe it. He can certainly, remove those felonies. And at that point, Libby, really would not have paid for, for his crimes. I think that what's quite interesting, at least in my mind, is the two-page statement that President Bush's statement regarding, his decision to commute the sentence. For the first time, we actually have seen the president actually, you know, mention Valerie Plame. He has, in 4 years, since the nearly 4 years that this has been, this ordeal has been going on, he has never mentioned, uttered the name Valerie Plame. Mm-hmm. And yet he did so in this statement. But he stopped short of saying, you know, that anything bad happened as a result of the leak of her identity. He said that you know, Scooter Libby has suffered greatly, but made no mention of the impact this has had on the Wilsons.
Now, Jason, just let me jump in here. I just pulled up WhiteHouse.gov. We've got a picture of Pudi and W there.
Right.
The lead story is about their meeting in Kennebunkport. And then there are a list of disasters here. He declared a disaster in New York State, a disaster in, again in New York State. And I don't see any statement on Libby. Is that under current news or press briefings? Do you know?
It's actually not on the White House website.
It's a secret.
I don't know. I guess they're not publicizing it for the whole world to see yet, but it's floating out there. If you just type into Google President Bush statement on Scooter Libby and click news, that will certainly come up for you.
Okay.
You know, it's a lengthy statement. On one hand, he says he totally respects the jury's verdict, then contradicts himself, but I think this sentence is excessive. You know, it's interesting how he absolutely, how the president absolutely contradicted the Justice Department's own guidelines when it comes to enforcing or recommending, you know, the steps that need to be taken for either commuting a sentence or a pardon. In fact, it actually, you know, so the recommendations say that the, you know, the president or that the person who was convicted should at least spend some time, you know, should be in jail before you do any, before you make any move.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even consult with the Justice Department. But then again, you know, that is absolutely within his right to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is a travesty, and the fact that it's actually has come down, that's not the surprise. I think the surprise is that the president led people to believe, and perhaps this isn't even a surprise, but led people to believe that he would not interfere, would not get involved in any decision related to Libby while there was an appeals process pending. But clearly this has been something that just did not happen over the course of 2 or 3 hours. This had been a long planned effort.
And quoting from the statement, here's Bush, "I've said throughout this process that it wouldn't be appropriate to comment or intervene in this case until Libby's appeals have been exhausted. But with the denial of bail being upheld and incarceration imminent, I believe it is now important to react to that decision." So it's Scooter's butt that is on the line,
right?
And that is what causes the president to finally make a statement. You're right. In here, he twice references Valerie Plame. And a little bit later on here, this is fascinating spin. He says, critics of the investigation, and you read that line and you would think of people
right.
like you and me.
Right, exactly.
Critics
exactly.
have argued that a special counsel should not have been appointed, nor should the investigation have been pursued after the Justice Department learned who leaked Plame's name to columnist Robert Novak. He's referring to Armitage there. Furthermore, the critics point out that neither Libby nor anyone else has been charged with violating the Intelligence Identity Protection Act or the Espionage Act, which were the original subjects of the investigation. Finally, critics say the punishment does not fit the crime. Well, hey, there are other critics here, W. There are
right,
critics who
exactly.
say that this was a weak investigation that collared one guy, when we know there was a conspiracy that went right up to Vice President Cheney, if not higher. And the
exactly.
cover-up has held, and that's what critics are really talking about.
Yeah,
not a couple of right-wingers like Kissinger, you know, who wrote letters asking for leniency for Libby.
Well, that's it seems that you know, Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard wrote that, you know, that paragraph for President Bush. I mean, it really shows that somebody within the, you know, close to the president has been following, not only following this case as they probably should, but paying more attention to, you know, the critics as opposed to our system of justice, which this president, this White House, has no respect for, and they have proven that time and time again. I think what needs to happen at this point, as I said, this is, I don't think that people would be surprised by this decision. They probably would be surprised at how quickly it happened, the fact that it happened on a Monday, that it happened, early in the afternoon as opposed to, late in the evening.
Yeah, but official Washington is on vacation, and a lot of Americans are, too.
Yes, that's totally true. But I think at this point, what really needs to happen is Patrick Fitzgerald has to, and hopefully Congress needs to press this matter. They need to find out what his evidence, what evidence he has, all the materials that he has collected during the course of this investigation. As you said, this leads directly to the vice president. And this action by the president today only fuels the debate that this was, that Scooter Libby was taking the fall for the White House. And, with the promise of a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah. Well, Jason, I appreciate you updating us. I hadn't seen the president's statement, so this is very helpful. And
yeah.
I got a stack of phone calls I want to get to here, so let's plan to talk again tomorrow at our regular time.
I look forward to it, Peter.
All right. Jason Leopold from truthout.org. And just a little more from Bush's statement, don't choke on this. I respect the jury's verdict, but I've concluded that the prison sentence given to Mr. Libby is excessive. Therefore, I am commuting the portion of his sentence that required him to spend 30 months in prison. Wow. All right, let's see who's next here. Jake's been holding the longest on line three. Hello, Jake. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter B. How's it going?
I'm doing, not quite as good as Scooter Libby today.
I'm just waiting for George W. Bush to pardon himself. That's where his thing's headed. I mean, obviously, he's covering Cheney. After all, we look at Scooter Libby. What was his job? He was Cheney's chief of staff, in addition to being a major advisor to Bush as well. So, obviously, they're making sure that Libby will not go to prison. And by not going to prison, that makes Libby not want to talk to prosecutors, not want to talk to the Congress. But what they do by commuting the sentence instead of pardoning it is they still have Libby. Libby has to maintain his silence. Otherwise, a year and a half from now, Bush won't pardon him.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. This is enough to secure his silence. What remains to be seen is if Patrick Fitzgerald will decide that he needs to squeeze Libby. And I'm not sure that the commutation gives him any leverage to do so. But certainly congressional committees could now draw out Libby and say, look, you got to tell us the truth here because you are being, more or less exonerated. The penalty has been removed, and therefore you owe us cooperation. I'd like to see these newly active and more aggressive, not perfect, but more aggressive than they were, committees on Capitol Hill call Scooter up and ask him a few questions.
Well, it's about time. I'd say they need to do more. Like, for instance, John Conyers' committee needs to get those impeachment articles going.
Yeah.
The deal here with Cheney is Cheney obviously thinks he's above the law. And, Cheney's running the government. Bush is just a figurehead. Bush thinks he's the king, the monarch, but he's just, the clown, really. And the idea that Cheney is going to get his chief of staff off like this after he violated national security, it just shows that this little neocon club is above the law. These guys who signed on the project for the New American Century, people like Cheney and Rumsfeld and Libby, Wolfowitz, these guys can do whatever they want. They can get away with whatever they want, break whatever law they want. And they are literally above the law. And that is what we need to pay attention to here. These people think they are above us. They are the most un-American crowd ever to take power in this country, and we need to impeach them and remove them from office. And why any Democrat would say it's a good idea for the Constitution, for the country, or politically to oppose impeachment. I like to see them come on Peter B's show, get a backbone, unlike some of your leaders, get a backbone, come up here and explain why impeaching Bush and Cheney is a bad idea. Please, do it.
All right. I take the bait there. Thank you, Jake, and thanks for the letter you sent. I'll read it on the air over the next few days when I have a moment.
Thank you, Peter.
You bet. Now to Sandra in Stockton. Thanks for your call, Sandra. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. Listen, do you think there'll be any sort of political fallout with this guy doing this? I mean, maybe I'm lost, but it just seems just over the top. They're so scandalous.
Well, I mean, Bush's approval ratings can drop a little bit, but that won't matter. He's a lame duck. Cheney's approval ratings could drop below 9%. He seems unfazed by that. There is no legal or legislative remedy. The pardon is an absolute power, and commutation as well. These are absolute powers ascribed to the president in the Constitution. So, you go ahead.
Well, I like how he's able to still not testify if Congress requires him because the conviction is still in place.
Well, I'm not sure that he would be banned from testifying. You're correct that he remains convicted, only the sentence has been taken away. But how would that prevent him from testifying?
Well, I think he could still, can he still claim the fifth, though, because he's still...
Because double jeopardy prevents him from being tried again for the same offenses.
Okay, so the Congress would call him and he would have to answer questions. Right?
I believe so. I'm not a lawyer, and he is. Let's keep in mind, this is a very rich irony that many people overlook. Do you know what the last client that Scooter Libby served in private practice before he joined the Cheney vice presidential office as chief of staff?
Oh, I shudder to guess who.
He arranged the pardon that Bill Clinton granted to Mark Rich during the final 20 minutes of his presidency.
You know what? That's beautiful, Peter. Thank you for that. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye. Appreciate the call. That's Sandra in Stockton. We're going to take a break because, it's the law here. Somebody's got to pay the bills. And then we'll return for more of your phone calls. You want to comment on the Libby commutation? 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. And there's a Billy on the line. He's going to get his reward next. I'm Peter B. Collins.
President Bush says he listens to his military commanders. Well, Mr. President, I was one of those commanders, and you weren't listening when we warned you of the dangers we'd face invading Iraq. Now our military is overcommitted, and America is less secure. Mr. President, you're being told we need serious diplomacy, not escalation, and you're still not listening. If the President won't listen, Congress must.
We're going. Tom Hartman.
Why would we hand the beating heart of democracy, the vote, over to a private corporation?
It's the Tom Hartman program.
And we're giving it to a corporation called Diebold, whose former president, Wally O'Dell, says, you know, I'm going to give Ohio to George W. Bush. We're giving it to a corporation like ES&S, who used to be run by Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator from Nebraska. I mean, it's our vote.
Tom Hartman, weekday evenings on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
9 minutes before the hour. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
We are working our way through the stench caused by the announcement from the White House today that the president has commuted the jail sentence of Scooter Libby. He remains subject to paying a $250,000 fine, and I'm sure friends of W will take care of that. And he'll be on probation for 2 years. I think he automatically loses his law license. But hey, he'll get think tanked for the rest of his life and taken care of. And maybe he'll be the charity that Dick Cheney donates his Halliburton stock to when he leaves office, if he actually makes good on that promise. Debbie emailed from Eureka. The president has stripped away the jail time given to Scooter by the judge, saying that the penalty was just too harsh. He still has to pay the fine and lose his law license. What a joke our country has become. Very well put, Debbie. If you want to drop me an email, it's peter@peterbcollins.com. Or if you're a desert dweller, I get a lot of emails from her, a righty, just send it to fullofit@peterbcollins.com. It'll find me. And Billy checks in from Big Sur. Hello, Billy.
Hello, Peter. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm delighted to hear from you. That makes it a 3 Billy hour. And we are sending you the extra DVD we have of Norman Solomon's War Made Easy. I think you'll find it very interesting.
Well, thank you. I look forward to seeing it.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Well, just a couple things in regards to Scooter. I mean, I always find myself referring back to Bush on the Couch by Dr. Frank. Dr. Justin Frank?
Yeah, we actually saw Justin Frank 2 weeks ago in Washington. He's alive and well, and there's a new edition of the book coming out this fall.
Oh, no, you're kidding.
No?
It's going to get worse?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. It's hard to get through the one I've got.
Yeah.
But at any rate, I mean, in it, I mean, he points out a lot more than once that George W. is, in one way or another, absolutely never wrong about anything.
Right.
And he is the only one that's able to make decisions, and everybody's got to go by his decisions only. So, I mean, I expected this all along. I never thought that Scooter Libby was going to end up going to jail.
I actually thought they were going to let him go to jail and then find, you know, the Labor Day weekend or Christmas time to...
You know, when there's nobody listening to the radio.
Yeah, to give him the full pardon. And I still am scratching my bald head because I don't see what benefit Bush gets by this half measure. Maybe, you know, he thinks that this will appear to be Solomon-like. But everybody knows he gave his crony a jail out of free card.
Yeah.
Or if that didn't work, but you know what I mean.
No, yeah, I know what you meant. A get out of jail free card.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And otherwise, you know, when you were talking to the Reverend Billy there, and by the way, I happen to be one myself.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
A real one.
Well, as an avocation, yeah, I perform weddings.
Okay.
Of the Universal Life Church.
Oh, I got one of those too. I think I'm a bishop.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I paid the extra $3.
Well, I got mine in 74. It cost me 10 cents back then.
Oh, we'll go for the upgrade. They're online now, and you could be a bishop, or there are all kinds of titles now available.
Pope Billy.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, in regards to the Reverend Billy, who you were speaking to earlier, I always hoped that the days of what I will call the Reagan-esque, and by that I mean what he did in Berkeley many years ago with mm-hmm. The rather unwarranted arrests and such, and the Nixonian period of the same type had gone away. But apparently it really hasn't. To arrest people on the street for, of all things, reading the First Amendment or any part of the Bill of Rights. I mean, this is terrible.
Well, and Billy enumerated some of the other crackdowns that they now have, the right to cite people for shouting. And, of course, that's selectively enforced. They have some restriction on cameras mounted on a tripod that you can't leave them there for more than 30 minutes. Well, hey, you know, a terrorist who is scouting a place to attack doesn't set a camera up on a tripod. That's clearly designed to intimidate members of the American public, not somebody who has nefarious intentions against the Big Apple. The other point that he made that I think is worth seconding is that Michael Bloomberg has a very benign image, but he presided over the police sweeps that the New York PD conducted nationwide in advance of the staged Republican convention there that was, of course, timed to maximize capitalize the glow of 9/11 on the Bush reanointment in 2004. And in the fall of 03 and the spring of 04, Bloomberg authorized New York City cops to go all over the country, infiltrate and attempt to intimidate peace groups that were planning to come and peacefully, lawfully demonstrate against the Republicans gathered there in September of 2004. And that's just one example that Michael Bloomberg is not a friend to our civil liberties. And there are a lot of people who think that he's an interesting entry into the presidential sweepstakes. For me, it really remains to be seen. Billy, we're going to send you that DVD. Give my regards to Big Sur today, will you?
I will.
I love it there. Thank you very much. Ed in Aptos, you're next. You're on the air.
Greetings.
Hi, Ed.
How you doing?
Not bad.
I'm surprised you're not on vacation.
No, I'm going on vacation for a long time in a couple of weeks, but I'll be here until the 17th or 18th.
But I think it's ironic, the his clemency or whatever you think. When I hope the right wing Christians take note of the fact that he even laughed at the that person, that the lady in Texas,
Carla Faye Tucker.
Yeah, her name's, you can remember it better than I. But mm-hmm. it's just so ironic, and that somebody's life is worth less than two and a half years in jail.
Well, and, this is part of a pattern, Ed, and I'll be brief here, but this administration has valued certain lives over those of others on so many different occasions, whether it's the value of an Iraqi life, the value of a Palestinian life. They're able to write off large groups of people. But when it comes to white Republicans with ties to the Bush administration, hey, there is no higher life form.
Amen. Very good. Keep up the good work, and maybe this will bring some people to their senses. But
I doubt it.
Well, you and I do. I can't say I have much hope in that respect, but one can only hope by now, I guess.
Yep. Thank you, Ed.
Okay. Keep
all
up the good work.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
I want to thank everybody for calling today, and thanks for listening to the program. Trigger's here. I can smell it. I'm going to saddle up and ride off into this beautiful summer sunset. What do you say we meet back here tomorrow by the radio?
Happy trails to you.
The Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. You can visit our website for archives and to catch the live stream when it's working. That's peterbcollins.com.
Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds?
Hi, it's Sheila Gale reminding you to listen to my show, 12-Step Talk, Uncensored, all about addictions, every Saturday, 4 to 5 in the afternoon, 12-Step Talk, Uncensored, where we deal with addictions, taking the shame and the blame out of this horrible disease. 12-Step Talk, Uncensored, it's about time. Sponsored by Sun Street Centers, Building Healthy Communities, a drug and alcohol treatment center in Monterey County. For more information, call 753-5135, Sun Street Centers.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Lewis Scooter Libby has been spared from time behind bars late today after a panel of federal judges refused to let the former White House aide stay out of prison while he appeals. President Bush commuted Libby's sentence. Mike Allen is chief correspondent for Politico.com.
This followed one of the most secret deliberations to go on in the 7 years the president has been in office. He signed it in the Oval Office at 5:30, right after his White House counsel, Fred Fielding, called the judge in the case, the special counsel, Patrick Fitzgerald, and a lawyer for Mr. Libby.
Fitzgerald, in a written statement, takes issue with the president's conclusion that the sentence was excessive.
Libby was facing until today 2.5 years in prison after being convicted in March for lying to a grand jury and also obstructing an investigation into who leaked the name of former CIA operative Valerie Plame. At his sentencing, the judge lectured Mr. Libby that no one was above the law.
CBS News correspondent Bob Orr. New York Senator Chuck Schumer is among many Democrats denouncing the president's decision.
The commutation of Scooter Libby's sentence was both sad and predictable because this administration has always held itself above the rule of law.
But House Republican Whip Roy Blunt of Missouri says President Bush did the right thing. Of the 8 people arrested in connection with the attempted car bombings in Britain, 6 are physicians, doctors from the Middle East who've been working at British hospitals. Correspondent Sheila McVicker reports they may have been recruited to join a sleeper cell.
CBS News has learned that intelligence agencies believe the person who carried out that recruitment is the current head of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. In 2004, he was tasked by Zarqawi, the then head of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, to find people who could move to the West, who could have legitimate jobs, who could be there legally, and who could sleep until the time was right.
U.S. security officials say they found nothing to link the suspects to anyone in this country, and they found no intelligence suggesting an attack on the United States is imminent. New research on smoking shows just how fast young people can get hooked. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports.
Think a single cigarette can't hurt you? If you're young, it can trigger an addiction, says a study in the Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine. Researchers followed more than 1,200 Massachusetts adolescents and found that among